You clicked on episode 66 of the Jock and Nerd podcast. We are reviewing Marvel's Netflix show called Jessica Jones. You may have heard of it. It's a full spoiler review. Not much more to say other than let's go and check it out.
It's the Jock and Nerd podcast with your hosts, Anthony and Imran.
Hey, friend, welcome to the Jock and Nerd podcast. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
He's the nerd.
And this is our extra special Marvel's Jessica Jones on Netflix season one review.
Wowie zowie!
And that was a sound clip, but actually joining us on the review is everyone's favorite felty American Rug Boy. How's it going, Rugs?
Hey, what's up, guys? Can you hear me? Do I sound good?
You sound great.
You sound almost like Tom Jones in a weird way.
I sound like Tom Jones?
Isn't that strange? Yeah, okay.
I don't want to sound like Grace Jones.
Well, that's not necessarily bad. I think she's got a badass mohawk. I mean, any woman with a mohawk like that?
Wonder what she looks like now.
She probably looks really horrible. Grace? He doesn't know who Grace Jones. How do you describe Grace Jones to the millennial here,
she
Anthony?
She basically looks like a giant.
She's like an African Amazon warrior princess.
I'm looking her up as
well. Yeah. She kind of looks like a dude.
She does. And she was.
She has a dude haircut.
That's weird.
She was married to David Bowie, right, at one point? And she was in the James Bond movie. Was it Live and Let?
This kind of looks like RuPaul.
Yeah, a little bit. But she's actually a woman.
This is a woman. RuPaul's really strong facial.
Very strong chin bones. Right.
Yeah, this is weird.
Cheekbones.
But this is not the Grace Jones review show. This is, like we said, this is not the Grace Jones.
If you notice, I built that in there. Meaningless jock, nerd, and rug boy banter.
I think, okay, check mark. We've checked that off the agenda. This is not the Grace Jones has awesome cheekbones and a mohawk podcast. That's a separate podcast. This is the Jessica Jones review. We are going to go over the whole first season
of
the binge-worthy Jessica Jones, kind of like we did with Daredevil, which if you guys haven't heard that, you should check out that show. We do the whole season. You know, and I think this is better than doing it episode by episode, as some people do.
Some people do. I've seen that. I've seen some break it into like quadrants of four or five.
I guess that'll make sense too, but being that like it's all released at once and you can literally sit down and watch it all at once, it's just one long fucking movie, people. That's how we're going to deal with it.
Yeah.
No, we can't do episodic reviews on this. It's just, it's a binge watch, it's a binge review.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely. It matches the thing. Now, a little warning going forward, right, everybody?
Start it off right away.
We're going to do this.
Prepare to be spoiled!
So if you have not watched this show, I would recommend pausing the podcast now, coming back 13 hours later after you've watched the episodes, and pick it up
pressing play right then and there.
You will be...
If you haven't watched it, you're a douche, by the way.
Yeah, that's also, what have you been doing? What are you doing? What is more important than watching Jessica Jones on Netflix?
There's nothing going on in the world or anything.
No, there's not those politics or shootings or terrorists. Or fuck all that. Jessica Jones on Netflix. That's the only thing
that
matters. Now, a unique thing about this episode is that the jock actually did some work. He's like, look, I'm going to quarterback for this. And then I was like, I don't understand. You didn't give me any money, and I don't have any change on me to give you a quarterback. But whatever.
Bad lame jokes from the
That's
heck. Yeah, you're stepping into my territory.
No, it would go like sophomoric if you went rug boy style.
Yeah, I was one level up. Look, in my defense, I know about sports. This is a shtick. It's a hack shtick. I'm the nerd. I don't know sports. I understand how sports are played. I just don't really give a fuck. That's all. That's how that breaks down.
Fair enough. But for me, quarterbacking the show, I mean, not really doing too much, just kind of guiding the discussion. So first half of the show is more geeking out about the actual show and things in the show, characters, favorite moments, themes, metaphors, and then play a little commercial. And then second half will be more of a comparison to other shows as well as the future ramifications of this show. So as you had mentioned, full spoiler alert.
Full spoiler.
Spoiler.
Like that,
I
hiked the podcast to you, and you are ready to throw
I'm
it.
I'm ready
now.
To throw it to you.
Ready to Aaron Rodgers
I'm ready,
the
I'm,
fuck
I'm,
out
I
of
see
this.
Rug Boy downfield, and I'm about to throw it long.
Oh, he's running around. He's looking for the pocket. He's gonna
I'm
Aaron,
open.
He's Aaron Rodgers. He's going to Aaron Rodgers the shit out of this
Aaron
podcast.
Aaron Rodgers. We're in Chicago.
I'll catch the ball in my mouth.
Have you seen what Aaron Rodgers does, though? Come on. It doesn't matter who he plays for. The guy, that's some crazy superhero type fucking throwing shit.
That's true. That's
now,
true.
To really get the football analogy going, when Anthony quarterbacks, Imran, you have to tackle him at some point.
All right.
Randomly when he's in mid-sentence.
I can even need a, I wish I had a tackle sound. It just goes, bonk. I'm going to take it out. I sacked the quarterback. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. All right. So we got the spoiler alerts out of the way. We got the bullshit banner out of the way. Yeah. Let's start the fucking show.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
So, guys, snap it right over to me. Yeah. So, obviously, we've all watched the show. Rugboy, I think, were you the last one to finally catch up?
Yeah. It took me a while.
Okay, so since it's most fresh in your mind.
That means nothing.
It really
doesn't mean, actually, never mind, because
I just watched it. You don't know anything about the show.
Like, wait, what happened?
All right, let's just go with this. What did everyone think of the show? Did everyone like it?
Yes, I did like it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I coming in kind of knowing what to expect. I think it's a different experience with this show where they also crafted it to where if you don't know anything about the MCU, mm-hmm. it's a great entry to the MCU. If you go into this not even watching the trailer, I think you get even more rewards and surprises. Whereas we're nerds. I read Alias, the book that this Jessica Jones based on Brian Michael Bendis.
Sort of, right? It just takes a little bit out of
it. It takes a little bit of liberties, yeah. But it largely, there's a lot of stuff it does exactly the same, and it takes a little bit of liberties, and they make a lot of good choices. But I thought, it was really interesting. It was the first episode for me, I was like, okay, this is not as fast. It doesn't hook you as much as the first episode of Daredevil does.
Yeah, that's going to be an easy comparison.
But by the end, again, when fucking Hope shoots her parents in the elevator at the end of episode one, I was like, okay, you have my attention.
That was the hook.
What the fuck is this all about?
Yeah, and we're all coming from a little bit different backgrounds. Rugboy read Alias. You read Alias?
I read Alias. See, I never read Alias.
I also read, the Avengers runs where she was part of the Avengers, and even the Defenders run that they rebooted that she was part of. And, so I've known about her for a while.
Her character kind of gets lame in the comic books, though, doesn't she, after
I've only
Alias.
Seen her with Luke Cage holding a baby. That's
she's
all I've
just
ever
like,
seen
I believe that's where she is now. Like, yeah. She's just a mom she's taking care of her baby with Luke Cage.
So... what did you guys think of let's just start with Kristen Ritter since she's the main person. What did you guys think of her performance as Jessica Jones? Especially since you guys have read Alias, does she fit the Jessica Jones archetype that you guys deciphered from reading the book?
I think she's a little bit more, what do you want to say? Like, she's a little bit more slight in build and stuff than I would picture Jessica Jones. I figured that she'd be a little bit more substantial. Mm-hmm. But she does match the character. Jessica Jones is kind of like this mousy, brown-haired, like nondescript-looking girl that you'd never question would be at a bar getting drunk, But that's the whole appeal of that. She's also a super-powered person that you'd never think of. She's not like this hyper-sexy Scarlett Johansson or anything like that. She's kind of like this plain Jane.
Right.
Kristen Ritter is a little bit more glamorous, a little thinner and more waify than I would expect. But she carried herself like she was one of those people. So her acting ability kind of overpowered her physical representation.
I think that was on purpose, too, because as you had mentioned, Kristen Ritter is a little bit slight of build. It was a matter of fact. She's just strong. She doesn't need to look strong.
Exactly.
They don't draw attention to her being this masculine looking woman.
It's contrast she's just a woman. To Luke Cage almost.
Right. She just is strong.
Happens to be.
And they don't draw attention to that.
And I mean, the whole show is like such subdued, understated, realistic use of powers, the way they display it. But I think she killed it in this role, dude.
Right.
She nailed it by the end of this. Like I loved, she's that. She's that like dark, quirky girl next door that's very mysterious that you would think that like to me that was the most alluring thing. Like it's someone I'd be like I would totally get a crush on. Like I'd be like, oh, who's that dark, mysterious chick? But then the way she plays her flawed character is amazing, and she did a great job. She fucking kills this role.
Do you have any questions of why they didn't go with the brown hair and the curly brown hair?
I think it's irrelevant though. It really the color of the hair in this case, like she is the same character.
I think it was they might have done that because
it would look a lot like Scarlet.
I don't even think it's that. It's the Patsy Walker contrast with her being a blonde and like the more feminine looking. like very like this is like American ideal of what a woman should look like. Then Jessica Jones with the black, almost kind of gothic look, and wearing like the same clothes every episode. You notice she doesn't change her wardrobe at all.
Yeah, she looks skanky.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And she always is wearing the washed out jeans and like the scarf and then just like a tank top and like a leather jacket. It's very like simple.
I love that look, though.
And it's in contrast to like the glamorous life that Patsy Walker, Trish, is living.
And even how both of them grew up. Like I think
everything in this show was done on purpose.
Yeah, I feel like it was deliberate too. That's why I asked the question why they didn't go with the brown hair.
Right.
But that's a good observation, Anthony.
Yeah, no, and I think going back to her being slight of build, she kind of acts like that, like a lot of the like Hal Jordan sort of, or like these delinquent male characters that are like down on their luck and are just kind of like cocky and like don't really have a lot going on, but you know there's something inside them. She just happens to be a woman. But they never draw attention to that, which I think was also
good. And that's like the whole show is great. Like
right.
That.
The whole show
she
is.
She carries great. Herself, though, like she's more tough than she is. She walks with like a.
She's
like
got
she
a
has
swagger.
Yeah, she has. She knows she has strength and she carries it through how she walks.
I've noticed that every time she's walking.
Very method.
Yeah, like her shoulders are very back and she's very
great
tall.
Great posture.
She's got that swagger, but you see that walk the whole time.
She's got that swagger, but then she's all. What was great about her is she has that swagger, but you could tell that she plays up that she has underlying issues, PTSD, trauma in her life. So she's always coping with it with alcohol and jokes and not taking things too seriously.
Such an amazing three-dimensional flawed character. Like she's an asshole sometimes.
Right.
Like this is not. She's a great anti-hero almost.
She's a piece of shit.
She's a piece of shit.
What was that character's name? The druggie. The Stone?
Malcolm.
So then when they're in the hospital, this is when I realized like she's a different character than anything we've seen. When she's in the hospital and she pushes Malcolm
up
against like the nurses to get distracted so that she can go and get the drug.
She doesn't even say sorry. She doesn't say sorry. About this. She just shoves him and throws him under the bus.
You know?
I love that moment because like there was that moment where Luke is like, you're not a piece of shit. And then she finally tells Luke what happens and that, you know, she killed Reva. And the minute I was like, and then he has that amazing speech where he's like, you touched me with those hands. I let you, you know, get close to me. And I'm thinking, wow, she is a piece of shit. He says that line. He goes, you are a piece of shit. I was like, wow, I love when a show says the line I'm thinking at the same time. Like that, so you know that they're fucking hitting something.
It's not even the fact that she killed Reva, which is a shitty thing, but it wasn't her fault. It's the fact that she was kind of watching Luke Cage after.
Yeah.
Just to like follow him and just like from her point of view, she's tracking his life.
Nobody hired her?
No, she was just – I got that she was doing that just because she cared.
She felt bad.
She felt bad. But she was doing it in the wrong ways. She was just watching him just to see like if he would be okay.
Because she blew up like the girl that was seeing him, the married woman. She blows up, her spot by accident, by lying. There's like lies upon lies ruined. Like if you look at the ripple effect of like how many lives get ruined by fucking shitty things that she does.
It's a metaphor actually for – and I read this on Devin Faraci's article and I agree with it. It's a metaphor for trauma. Hmm. So people that experience a ton of trauma end up just passing along their trauma to other people.
Yeah,
instead of coping with it and dealing with themselves, they end up passing it along to friends,
and that affects
family.
Someone else, and, always, and then those and then, people
exactly,
send it
and then
on.
It's a spider web of just trauma affected by one person.
I mean, that's definitely true if you think about like growing up and with your parents and how you're going to send out what you get, how you're treated.
Well, yeah, like if you have abusive parents that are alcoholics, they usually the children end up being like that, and then doing that to their kids. Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same metaphor.
You break that cycle. It's crazy.
You kill Purple Man.
Yes, and they do. Speaking of purple, I want to talk. You know, I'm an illustrator, and you know, Rugboy has an artistic background. And I love talking.
He draws like with chalk on the sidewalk.
Yeah, well, he puts it in his mouth, right, Rugs? How's your chalk drawings going,
dude? It's weird because you know, I have to like cough up chalk dust and stuff like that. And when I shit,
and then it gets all over his nose, and they think this Felty's on coke. He's got a coke problem.
But it's like pink.
Yeah, it's just well, it's cut with like B12, vitamin B12. That's when it's pink, you know, it's cut with something.
My drawings are very childlike, but my penis is like my best.
Jean Michel Basquiat, eat your heart out. Rugboy will outdraw the shit out of your childlike.
When he's got to erase the chalk like drawings, he just pees on it.
He just like rolls on it, and he's gonna shake his felt off.
All right.
Point being, I love talking about art direction. You know, in the Daredevil show, we talked a lot about the colors, the palette. This series, again, does it. Let's just start with the opening credits, which Ruggs, I don't know if you agree with me. I actually like these opening credits better than Daredevil.
They're different. I mean, I would watch the Daredevil ones like a lot more than I watched this one. I'd skip through this one
a
lot.
I'm on the same boat.
I did the opposite thing. After a while, I skipped past the Daredevil credits. Now, I have this clip. I'm going to play the music in the background so we can talk about it. It was part of the reason why I loved this.
Ooh, we're in the mood now.
This opening so much is because I love this music. You had made a comment, which you'll bring up, but what this does is it reflects the show so much better than the theme song Daredevil. Like, this is like weird, like quirky noir detective kind of bouncy jazzy tone, right?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Right, and that kind of reflects the one side of the show.
Yeah.
But then this theme comes on, and as the theme progresses, you hear this electric guitar start to come in.
Right.
And it gets a little heavier. It gets a little like crazier. And I'll bring it up. My favorite part. He does this crazy solo. So that reflects like how the show progresses throughout the season. Like it gets crazier and crazier.
Yeah, that's true.
Hold on, this is my favorite part. And it cuts right back to the little jazzy tune.
Yeah, it's like this shit that's layered upon this like kind of happy thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and like so, and the credits designed by comic book artist David Mack, who also did a lot of the covers for Alias.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this up. I'll put a couple of these in the show notes. A lot of watercolor washes, really gorgeous covers. I love the opening credits where you see the brush stroke, you see the layers of the art, you see the tones of purple in the beginning mixed with the gold to contrast when it gets a little crazy when the electric guitar kicks in. And then, like, you see your eye and it's all of this moving painting. I like these. I don't know why. I thought it fit the show better. Like, I like Daredevils because it was all, like, Catholic Church and the city of New York.
Blood.
And mm-hmm. blood. But this, every time I wanted to watch it because it was just, like, a really cool experience.
Okay, so I was the opposite.
Okay.
I thought Daredevils, I watched Daredevils credits every time I fast-forwarded through Jessica Jones's towards the end, like, the last three or four episodes.
Yeah, I don't know. I loved it. I just loved it.
Yeah, I started even earlier than that. I would put it on, like, I could jog right to the part where the guitar was, and I would listen to that part.
Right, that part's awesome.
So
I feel like that they should have actually truncated that a little bit and had that beginning part's too long. I would probably have come in a little earlier with the other change up.
And they've used that, the guitar, you hear that in various parts in some episodes. They bring that theme back, but the guitar solo part. I don't know. I didn't mind.
Here's where I differ.
Yeah.
I got from that opening, I got a Sex and the City vibe from it.
Yeah. It has that.
Yeah.
Those the vibraphones.
Yeah. And like the piano. Like,
okay.
And then when it picks up, let me finish. When it picks up, I get an image of just like men walking in and like raunchy sex all over, like Sex and the City, like. That with the guitar picks up, I just get like the feeling like, oh, this is just like it was good, but it felt more like a different show.
You think they're trying to get the female audience interested to
a little bit.
I disagree. Like the notes, they like why I don't know why I like this. I like it reminded me of there's a show called Northern Exposure, and it had kind of a quirky theme in the beginning, but really it was like a detective-y noir-y kind of mysterious jazz thing, and I didn't really get the Sex and the City bit, but I don't know. I liked it, so we'll agree to disagree there.
Yeah, we'll agree to disagree.
I didn't hate it. I just thought it was a little bit out of place. That's all.
But it was cool that they had David Mack to contribute and involved in the opening.
The credits were very much more detailed than the Daredevil.
There was more going on too, you know. So,
but we'll save the comparisons for later.
There's my two cents. I just wanted to play.
But you
that
mentioned
song.
The purples, and I think that's a good transition. So we talked a lot about Kristen Renner, but I think we need to talk about at least focus a little bit of time on David Tennant's
fucking
character,
David Tennant.
Purple Man.
God damn, maybe quite possibly the most villainous, believable MCU villain we've seen to date.
I would go with him being the best Marvel villain we've had.
And unfortunately, they had to fucking snap his neck at the end. Why? Why?
What do you think, Ruggs?
Well, you know, I just want to make a blanket statement about Marvel.
Yeah.
You know, they were purchased by Disney, and you'd think that the Disney would probably water it down or whatever, but they allowed them to go into places.
This is dark shit.
that's beyond anything a superhero show has ever been, and beyond most superhero movies comic book movies have been. I mean, the shit that Purple Man does is so psychologically fucked up and evil, like it's crazy. I mean, there's the thousand cuts, when she the crazy shit that
just
he would make
cutting and counting.
But the character is crazy because you'd think with all that power that he would want like world domination, or he would want to like be in charge of like a country or something. But he kind of just is a dick and like wants to fuck with people. Like, he's so fucked up that he doesn't have these grand designs. He's kind of like interested in Jessica Jones because she doesn't listen to him, and he gets obsessed with that.
And ultimately, that's way more realistic. Like, once you realize his background, it makes a lot of sense the way he is. Oh, now, even before they showed him, dude, the way they set him up in the first two episodes, like, he was menacing as fuck. Yeah. And you didn't even see him. And you, they don't ever call him Purple Man, do
they?
Never
call him Purple Man. He's always wearing a shade of purple on his clothing, but he's never called
him. And in the beginning, I love when she
He's actually Zebediah Kilgrave. Zebediah. But they never referred to him as Zebediah. Right.
He kind of gave himself the name Kilgrave. I do love in the beginning when we start to learn that Jessica has been traumatized by this guy and she's flashing back. And anytime you see the purple light, you're like, oh, some shit's going to happen. And he shows up like right in her ear, whispering. He licks her on the face real quick, dude. And it's and you're like, who the fuck is this guy?
What's great about him, or terrible about him, is he's a metaphor for trauma, for rape, basically. Yeah. Physical and mental rape. And that's like the worst kind of
abuse
that people, you know, that our society has. And he is literally the living, walking metaphor for that.
For a rapist.
Yeah. And what's great about him, or terrible, is that, like, his metaphor for rape, if you look at like a lot of he said, she said rape cases, it's very similar to his mind fucks because people, you know, in rape, the victim often is blaming the perpetrator, but then the perpetrator is like, she's crazy.
Yeah.
Same shit here. Yeah. People are like, there's someone mind controlling me. And people are like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Same thing.
But then you take it from his point of view, like imagine growing up and living your life and you don't know if people are doing things because you're forcing them to or because they want to.
It's not even that. It's the fact that from a very young age, you don't even know. You don't literally – you always think if you say something, people will do it for you. And it's never beat out of you to not get what you want. So if you're growing up at, say, age – what? How do you think it was? Seven, eight years old? And so every time you talk, someone does what you say.
He's the ultimate spoiled fucking brat.
Right. You're just a spoiled brat. That's really what he is. He was never disciplined.
It makes sense. The one thing
he
wants –
he would grow up like that.
The one thing he wants is the only thing he can't control. Right.
But,
you know.
There are limitations you have to mention.
Yeah, so what are some of the limitations of his power? In the beginning, before he gets enhanced a little bit, but in the beginning we find out that he can't control people at a far distance. They have to be a certain geographic – what is it like? I don't even know what it was, like 20 feet?
Yeah, I mean it's just, I think within earshot of him.
So he doesn't
have to be able to see him and hear him at the same time.
Yeah, and it doesn't work over a microphone, over a speaker. You have to
find this out because it's a virus.
It's a virus, right. So it's almost like, think about it, you can think about it like pheromones. Like he'll emit pheromones, and if you're in the vicinity and you see him and you hear him, you're compelled to, I was compelled to do this. It's an amazing power because who wouldn't want this power? I love the scene where he's in the restaurant. He's like, everybody be quiet. I was like, fuck, dude, I'd love to do that. That's who's never wanted to do that? What a crazy power.
No, it's insane. It was insane. And the lengths that Disney went and Marvel went with his powers, where he's, you know, telling people, if she doesn't come back in 2 hours, rip the skin off each other.
He always
faces.
Has a contingency plan.
Or
fucking
stare
genius.
Outside and don't blink until she comes back. It's like little things like that, and you're just like, oh my God.
Because he's had time to like get creative with his things. He's learned, and he's so bored.
He's just bored. Yeah. He really is just bored.
But then towards the end, with the whole father storyline, and he gets a serum that enhances his powers. And he does. He's able to do it over a microphone and control large groups of people. Makes him even more fucking deadly.
You saw the hint of that, though. Remember, he was like to the guy, "Go stare at that fence forever."
Yes.
Then 24 hours later, that guy's still standing there with pee down his leg, and you're just like, "Oh, like, wait, why is he still standing?"
Well, but and he even says to his dad, because they're having that conversation. He goes, "Remember, it's not incremental. It's or something." Meaning, it's not gonna. It's not exponential. It's incremental. Mm-hmm. But originally it was 12 hours. People would have to be listen to him for 12 hours.
Right.
And then clearly that extended it to like a day.
Right. I want to get Rug Boy in here because Rug, you've read the book and obviously you have too, Imran. But how did this compare to the Purple Man in that Alias run?
He made her think. I think that was more psychological. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't as physical. Like
he made her see things.
Yeah, he made her see things
that weren't there.
That weren't there. It was a little different.
I read that
plus he was purple. He was actually purple.
He would literally in the comic bang girls and then make her watch and then make her like want him to touch him or something, but she couldn't. Was that a thing? Yeah.
Yeah, so it was like more psychological.
Like he wanted her to want him, but he wanted to reject her so that he could reject her over and over and over again. Yeah. And in the last episode, he kind of mentions that too, where he's like, what should I do with you, Jessica? He's like, should I just make you want me so much and just keep rejecting you or this? And then he's like, maybe I'll just kill you.
Yeah. do you guys think comparing this to Marvel, the villains, there haven't been a lot of great ones in the Marvel
universe. They have a villain problem in the Marvel universe.
But everyone has said Loki is the best one. Do you guys think he's better than Loki?
I mean, Loki has similar powers. If you think about the illusions and making people take it over their minds.
He's a manipulator.
He's a manipulator also, yes. He's a master debater.
There's a hinge of evil in there's a devil kind of in Purple Man and Kilgrave. Whereas Loki just wants to be recognized as a king.
Yeah, he's just always like the little brother.
Right, he's just the little brother syndrome. Whereas
he's entitled. He feels like he's entitled.
I mean, this whole thing, like they dealt with, again, a personal story, a very small scale, intimate story of the bad guy and this one girl and all the devastation that she kind of has a lot of blood on her hands, you know, whether it's her fault or not. This format is the only way. Like, he's up there with Fisk. I would put, like, Loki, Fisk, and fucking Purple Man, like, top three. Maybe Kilgrave being one or two, but...
Rugs?
Go ahead. You're about to say something.
No, I'm just saying, but the fact that they're able to do this in this format in 13 episodes, this is why it's so good. Like, this in Daredevil is the best shit. Like we said, it's the best superhero thing that Marvel has made.
The format definitely helps because when you have 13 hours to play with, you can draw out villains.
And this is like the least superhero-y property out of all of them.
Yeah, true. No, what also was really cool about Purple Man, or we'll call him Kilgrave because that's what he's referenced on the show, is that he starts out evil. Then it looks like they're kind of going to redeem him by like an abusive childhood and he was experimented on. So you kind of start to feel bad for him.
I love that.
But then they turn it again. And they turn it. So it's a roller coaster ride.
This is what I wanted to say was that I heard a lot of complaints from Whovians, you know, Doctor Who fans, that they couldn't buy maybe Ruggs. Ruggs can give some insight. And we talked about this on the Blabs with some other Doctor Who fans that they had a problem buying Tennant as being evil because he's a really nice guy, apparently.
I've never watched that.
Very pleasant.
That's their
individual.
Fucking problem.
Exactly. And I'm so glad I didn't.
I had no problem.
Is he like a sex symbol on Doctor Who, or is he like the guy everyone fawns over?
No, there's another guy, Matt Smith, reason, I don't even think that he's attractive. I mean, like, if I was going to fuck anybody, it'd be David Tennant, probably.
Really? Tennant? I don't think he's very sexy. He's kind of creepy looking. This is why I liked it. I was so glad because he, to me, is now the Purple Man. Like, he's not Doctor Who. Right. He's the Purple Man. I bought it. I felt bad for him once we found out that he was tested on. And even when Jessica was torturing the shit out of him, I was like, wow, you're being a piece of shit now back. And I kind of felt a little bit bad.
There's a lot of like forum posts of Doctor Who fans that I noticed where it was like, I wish David Tennant would mind control me and stuff like that. I was like, oh my god,
girls think he's sexy.
they thought he was like a cool thing. It was like totally misreading this show. The intent of what his powers are.
What happened is when they started Doctor Who up again, they had this guy that was like the guy who played the McKeelith,
bless you.
Whatever. The guy from Thor, the dark.
Oh, Malekith. Chris Eccleston. Wasn't he Doctor Who?
Yeah, he was Doctor Who. And then they went to David Tennant, who's a lot better looking than him. So all the females.
In relation.
And then they went to another guy that was even younger than David Tennant.
And he's hotter.
And no, I really don't think so. But he was the guy in Terminator, the bad guy.
That's Matt Smith.
Yeah, that's Matt Smith. That was he's another Doctor Who.
The guy at the end who was the machine who became the
John Connor?
No, the living embodiment of Skynet.
Yeah, I know
when he became a person.
Yeah, okay.
But what were we talking about?
No, we're talking about David Tennant.
What did you think? So you were able to separate the Tennant performances.
Yeah, I was able to separate the Tennant performances. And I was going to say, what was your favorite moment between Jessica Jones and the Purple Man?
Oh, man, there's a lot.
For me, this is maybe even the favorite moment of the whole season, but the episode where he's got Purple Man in the hyperbaric chamber, whatever.
I was going to pick that one.
That tank, whatever they called it.
Yeah.
The hermetically sealed tank,
and she goes in.
Well, no, not when she goes in, but when he has his parents there, and she's trying to prove that she can get him on film using her powers, and it all goes
fucking
to shit.
That whole thing
that was
fucking amazing.
Listen, the episode, I think it's 9, a.k.a. Sinbin.
9 or 10, yes.
A.k.a. Sinbin that's where the show peaked for me, and then they kind of like meandered a little bit, but a lot of shit still happened. The last 4 episodes are fucking crazy. But Sinbin was amazing.
That was the best
one. Like, single episode was fucking amazing.
We all agree on that, because I was going to say the same thing, too.
I rewatched that whole episode again.
I felt terror.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, I was like, oh, no. Oh, no, no. Don't go put them in there. That's going to be bad.
Yeah, dude. That was like you were grabbing the edge of your couch and you're white knuckling it because you're like, what? This is not a good idea. And then fucking Hogarth cuts the tripwire. And then the minute, what's her name? Trish shoots the window down. I was like, oh, you're a fox now. That was not smart. In fact, Hogarth almost let him out before in that episode.
Well, you don't know that in this episode that Hogarth cut the wire. Yeah. You kind of get it, but you don't find out for sure until after.
I didn't understand why she cut the wire.
I don't think she
I
don't think she was fully on board with this torturing. Like, she didn't fully believe that he was.
And he was promising her to help her with her ex.
Yeah, she had other motives. She thought she could use him for other things.
Yeah, let's talk about Carrie Ann Moss from Trinity, from The Matrix.
So this is like your Robert Redford. This is like your fucking D'Onofrio of these shows. Fucking Carrie Ann Moss is amazing in this role.
That's where I wanted to go to, is highlighting other characters, because there are so many good performances. So Carrie Ann Moss, you're right. It's another get for Marvel, and it's amazing that Marvel's able to get these people into to act in
the gender flip of all these roles is also amazing, because that could easily been a dude. In fact, in the comic books, it is a dude.
Jaren
Hogarth is a lawyer for Iron Fist, so that's awesome, because we'll probably see her in the Iron Fist series.
Here's hoping.
Yeah, but the fact that they made her a woman and she was going through things a guy goes through, like a divorce and having a mistress who was super fucking hot, dude. The fucking secretary was smart.
Oh, yeah.
Holy crap.
Her tits were huge.
Yeah. Oh, she was gorgeous.
The scene where she's teasing her and has Jerry's hand up her dress and is like, if you want this, you're going to have to fucking end
Holy
it.
Shit.
Like, oh,
that's another thing we got to talk about. We'll talk about
gratuitous sex.
How sexy is this fucking show? This is the most sexual Marvel Studios production I've ever seen.
They didn't really show anything. It was just suggestive. Yeah. It was like, it was explicitly suggestive. If you can, like, you have to use your imagination. You don't see. There's a scene where the guy's going down on Trish.
Yeah,
it's under the sheets. You can't see exactly what he's doing, but you pretty much know what's going on.
It was very tastefully done, but still really hot, dude. Well, like me showing.
If you actually kind of analyze it a little bit, it's all positions in sex and oral sex where the woman was kind of in
power.
Woman
is in power. Yes.
You notice
yes.
like Jessica Jones is always on top.
Yes.
Or like in the case of Trish getting eaten out, usually they would show the man getting like BJ.
Yeah.
Instead, it's her getting it.
And then even with Hogarth and her mistress, she initiates it. Right. She's taking her control of
it's
her
all,
hand.
And it's never drawn attention to. It's all subtle.
Yeah.
But it's all positions where women are kind of running the shit, which is good. Which
That's
is
a good
different.
Point. Yeah.
I love what you. Well, so her whole storyline dealt with, her knowing Jessica Jones is. I don't know why she fucking hangs out with her, because Jessica caused her nothing but fucking trouble.
I think leading up to that point, though, Jessica Jones was a good ally for her, had done some good work.
She could serve these papers. She had the powers.
Jessica Jones would do it, and Carrie Ann Moss's character would be like, don't tell me how you do it.
Just do it.
So that was always her thing.
But the minute the hope thing happened, she got Hogarth involved. And I love how, the, you know, Hogarth was never really on Jessica's side or believing her until fucking Sinbin, where she sees the shit go down.
That was unbelievable.
You know, and then everyone knows, and but up until that point, you know, she needs evidence. But yeah, Carrie Ann Moss, great, great fucking role.
What did you think of Patsy Walker?
Another really good performance.
I liked her. A lot of people didn't like her.
She was subbed, from what I believe, for Captain Marvel.
Yes, it was an interesting choice to put this character, Patsy Walker, in, because in Alias, you're right, it's Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, who's getting a movie. So they switched out with this obscure – so Patsy Walker was an obscure 40s Marvel character before they were making superheroes, and then they turned her into Hellcat. And she's not really friends with Jessica Jones in the comic books.
No.
But I think it really worked.
But she's not obscure. I mean, they've made series with her.
She's been in the Avengers and shit, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, she's somebody. She's still around.
She was big enough. Yeah, she is. She's actually getting her own book, Hellcat.
Well, now because of this, probably they're
going to. She's had her own book, too.
But she was, she was popular enough from that run where they weren't making superhero comics. Yeah. Popular enough for them to want to carry over into Marvel.
Well, the story I heard is like that one of the writers, after they started making superheroes, one of the writers, Patsy Walker, was like, hey, you know, we can bring her back into this Marvel universe now. I got an idea. And he makes her Hellcat. So hopefully we'll get to see her become Hellcat moving forward.
She's on her way.
Dude, she's badass. I loved in the beginning, you know, she's the talk show host. And you think she's got a big mouth. But then you see her fucking crazy secure apartment. And then you see her fucking training. And I love how you saw the bruises. And you're like, what the fuck? Is somebody beating up on her? And you find out she's been fucking training this whole time. How does she go?
Why do you think she's doing that?
Like, something happened to her, right? Wasn't there?
Well, she was.
Or was it because of her mom?
I think it was her. Part of it was because of her mom. I think it's a metaphor for just kind of taking control. And so Jessica Jones lets her trauma kind of spiral her down a bad path.
So let's link the abuses. Jessica Jones has like this rape abuse, and she's abusing alcohol.
Well, that and her parents died when she was young. Like all this trauma.
Yeah. So trauma abuse. Yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say, and then Patsy Walker has similar trauma. Her mom's
verbal abuse.
Her mom's enforcing her to do this. She knows that Jessica Jones has been abused.
She also had a drug problem.
But instead of being like Jessica Jones and coping with it with alcohol, she takes the bull by the horns and starts to fucking turn her life around and be like, you know what?
A lot of people do.
A lot of people don't let trauma destroy their life.
They're going to learn how to
fight. She used it as a catalyst.
Yeah. And what a strong way for the show a female to like take control of her life.
It's fucking amazing.
It's really good. And I liked her performance. I thought she did a good job.
I also feel like there's a part in the, you know, when, you know, the shit happens in New York and the Avengers come and shit and there's the alien attack. And then all of a sudden she's trying to convince Jessica to be a superhero. She busts out the old costume, the jewel costume.
Yeah. That's great. I love all these Easter eggs because that was the costume.
She's into the superhero thing, Patsy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
She's like, she wants Jessica to. And so when Jessica like kind of turns her nose up at it, she's like, fuck it. I'm going to like do my thing.
Patsy's the one that brings her back, though. Patsy's always the one pushing the hero angle. You're right. Like, that's her hero conscience.
She is. She is much more naturally a hero than Jessica Jones ever was.
Like, she's fascinated by this hero thing.
She wants to be a hero and do good. She, you know, through her talk show, she's trying to help people. If she could physically help people, she would. And she was always the
first one by Jessica's side, even when she knows she's overmatched. Yeah.
She put herself out there in the finale, too.
She did. Not only in the finale, but when she takes the red.
Yeah. She took the fucking red, too, and went balls out.
Literally, her line where she's like, the guy, Will Simpson, who's Nuke in the comics.
We'll get to him.
We'll get to him. But he goes, you'll die. Like, you'll die if you take the red. You need the balance. And she puts it in her mouth and goes, worth it. And fucking beats his ass.
Dude, that was awesome. Like, and she's like, I'm pumped, dude. Yeah. Is this what you feel like? This is great. And then she fucking collapses and clutches her chest. And you're like, okay, that's not good.
But now, let's just talk about one other thing, because before you start moving on to other characters.
Yeah, go.
Is how do you feel about the way that they're linking all the origins of the powers, that it's coming from this one company and IGH. It's all
I love how I love how this really, you know, there wasn't an origin for Jessica Jones explicitly. This is really an origin of Kilgrave, and you don't really know. You get a hint of that accident with military chemicals. Something happened. You don't really know how Luke Cage got his power. This IGH thing is very interesting because it's not in the comic books. Here's the theory. Have you guys heard the theory of what it is?
No.
Go ahead.
Because they can't use mutants Instead of a mutant growth hormone, this is quite possibly an inhuman growth hormone.
Really?
IGH does not exist anywhere in the comic books. This could they could use this to tie. So Jessica was made with an accident. Luke was made as an experiment. Yep. There was all those kids on that USB drive being experimented. My other question is, where are those fucking kids? Do they have powers? Is IGH give that? Were these people inhuman and they were being released? Is this going to tie into the inhuman shit moving forward? I don't know.
Let's put a pin in that just because I think
that could go crazy.
That'll go to the second half of this when we talk about season two.
But they definitely have planted the seeds trying to connect it. I like what they're doing. I like that. I don't know exactly what it is.
Do you think this is going to connect to like Channel 7 Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff?
It quite possibly
could. Like a crossover?
I don't see why it can't be inhuman growth hormone. That's fucking awesome.
Okay, we'll get back to it later. Yeah. But yeah, I just wanted to ask that.
Well, you did bring up a good character, and I think we should transition to him. But without going too much into what we think he will be like in his own show, what did you guys think of Luke Cage?
Michael Coulter. It took a little bit for him to grow on me.
Oh, you didn't initially like him?
He's badass. I love the first time she sees him. He's wearing the yellow shirt, like you see Power Man wear a yellow shirt when she's spying on him. He was a little stiff in the acting delivery wise, but he grew on me, and I really liked him by the end of it. As far as can he hold his own show, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I agree with Imran.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I think he's like not quite. I mean, he's cool. I mean, I feel like he's.
He's cool. Like, you want to kind of be him. He's got a cool life there.
Like, he's a cool guy, but, like, yeah. I'm not really, like... Like, first of all, I think he's... If you talk about Luke Cage, I don't feel like they powered him up enough.
Mm-hmm. But there's a reason for that, and we'll get into
there
that.
There is?
Just the way they show the powers. I mean, the way everything seems subdued.
I think he's subdued, and I think I don't really think. I mean, it's weird how this guy's had powers for however long, and it just seems like he's never really like let loose or tested them out until he's fighting Jessica Jones in the end. Mm-hmm. You know, because he's under the control of the Purple Man.
We don't know how long he's had his powers though, and we don't know why. And I believe that's on that USB drive.
And that's what was crazy when he was letting loose on Jessica Jones. I really wasn't like, oh, this is cool. I want to see the show of this. I was like, all right, cool, whatever.
Yeah. You know? There wasn't enough like character quirks or it was just very almost, I don't want to say bland.
He was like you guys have both said, he was the coolest
straight guy.
He was the coolest guy on the block.
Plus
for sure.
But he was the damsel in distress role
right.
also,
he
which
is a metaphor
so
for
So you're gonna have to turn this guy into the lead hero when he's for the last two episodes he was out cold. Or the last episode he wasn't even awake. She fucking shot him in the head and he was out. He didn't do anything.
Well, what's great about the show though is they never drew attention to that either. You have to think that about it where you realize, oh shit, he was a damsel in distress. Like without comparing it too much to Supergirl. Supergirl would be like, I'm a man, and I'm in this role, and you're a woman saving me?
How did this happen?
Oh, my God. But going back to Luke Cage, you're right. He was the coolest guy there. I haven't read too much Luke Cage, but I always remembered him in the comics being a little bit louder, more boisterous.
There's two versions. Okay. That's like the 70s. Like the 70s version of Luke Cage is like very black culture. Like right. I love when he goes Sweet Christmas right after they fucking bang. Like that's one of his 70s. Like that's such a 70s sure. catchphrase to say Sweet Christmas.
He says it twice in the show.
And then the second time he says it because they're in the fucking grow house, which is a great green reference. I thought from green to green. I was so sad they knocked all those plants over. I was like, no, what did the plants do to you? Don't just punch them. You don't have to destroy the fucking product.
What I did like though about his fighting style is if you look at the look on his face when he fights, fucking bored.
He looks annoyed.
He's like,
just like really okay.
Way.
So real quick, the discussion of the powers. This is why I love how they displayed them. They were so subdued. It was like almost an afterthought, and because you realize that both Jessica and Luke know that if they really use their full powers, they're gonna fucking kill these dudes in a second. Like they're literally just swatting guys away. Which compared to like TV shows where these powered peoples. They fight just normal thugs, and it takes forever to drop thugs. Or even in, like, a Batman movie, like, really, Batman, it took you fucking 20 minutes to fight just normal thugs? these guys
Batman
are just
is
like
on superpowers.
Well, he is. But even in some of the other with the powered ones, like yeah. you're like, he shouldn't have taken him so long to fight a normal person. These guys are just like SWAT.
I feel like down. That you have to make the comparison as like a grown man fighting babies.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, it is. Like, because if you used your full power on a baby, you would crush the poor baby's soft
skull.
You just kind of
gently push them out of the way.
Yeah, and that's all it takes. And, like, she just has to exert a little bit of power. Now, was it just me, or did they make Luke Cage's skin look extra shiny? I thought he looked extra, like, plasticky shiny. I don't know if that was on purpose. For his better, but man, the guy's got good.
He just got the baby oil.
He's got fucking good skin, dude. He's jacked. Coulter's jacked.
Big dude. No, I
should be bigger, actually.
Yeah, I mean, he's realistically big though.
Well,
for
I heard that too, and there were like a lot of rumors back in the day, not back in the day, but a few years ago that The Rock could play a good Luke Cage. Yeah. But I kind of like Mike Coulter just because if it's like a dude that jacked, he's gonna stick out like a sore thumb. Like Mike Coulter, he's big. But he doesn't stick out.
No, if you saw him walking by, you'd be like, oh, that dude's big.
He's just a big dude.
But back to your point about the two different Luke Cages. Like, so then the modern-day Luke Cage is a little more not as 70s and a little more subdued.
I'd be interested to see how he evolves because I don't see him right now as the guy that's like, yeah, we'll take some money to do that job. Like, I don't see that.
They got to get to the Heroes for Hire somehow.
I don't see this guy yet doing that.
Look, if they take this Reva Connors thing and tie it in with the USB drive moving forward with the guy, because in the comics there's a guy that like frames him for something and that's the big conflict. And I think that's who Cottonmouth. I think that's who the villain's going to be in Luke Cage. It could be a nice like throwback to the 70s kind of a crime show. Like that would be cool if it was like a 70s throwback crime show that had a little more action. I mean, like this.
The best part about I don't want to get too into Luke Cage just yet.
Yeah.
Because we're kind of going off track. Yeah. You are? No, I'm just kidding. That's
I
cool.
always do.
But I think the best scene with Luke Cage is when they realize besides him taking the chainsaw to his stomach.
Oh, yeah,
I think the best was when him and Jessica find out that they both are powered and they can just go all out on each other.
A great moment because they're like,
they don't need to hold back.
The moment they realize that they're testing each other out and it's like sexy fighting and it's a little bit fighting and they're mad, but then and then they just fucking fuck the shit out of each other and break the bed. And just imagine that. You're like, wow, we could actually go full out and no one's going to get hurt. Like, of course they would end up together.
Well, that's a big part in their relationship, too, is because if you notice the first time they have sex, Jessica Jones is so, like, pissed off at herself for even putting herself in
the
situation.
And he seems like he's afraid to hurt her.
Well, this is a different point. But Jessica Jones is so, like, mad at herself.
She's, like, disgusted.
She's disgusted. So you notice in the first time that she has sex with him, she turns around and just lets her do him from behind. Because she doesn't even want to look at him.
Yeah, that's from
the comics, too.
Yeah.
But then the second time, they're both able to like look at each other and go full out. Like that's an evolution in their relationship.
But then, man, when you realize that she's the one who fucking super punched Reva, and you think about that, you're like, oh, like I felt dirty. I was like, holy shit, dude. Like she didn't tell him, and she just still went through it. That was great.
Anything else on Luke Cage,
dark.
Guys?
No, I mean, he's okay. He's serviceable.
I like when he got shot in the head.
There's one more character I want to highlight, and then if you guys want to talk about some other ones, we can.
Alrighty. Which one?
Will Travel as Will Simpson.
Officer Will Simpson. His name is like something else in the comic books.
It's Frank Simpson.
Frank Simpson.
I didn't like him at all.
Let's start with that.
Why?
I don't know. I just feel like it was too convenient that the guy that was the cop is the guy who was getting the fucking super soldier serum or whatever the fuck he was on, the regiment that he was on, it was just all too convenient.
Was it to show another case of, like, how you deal with Kilgrave's trauma?
And then he shows up at the girl's house that he tried to kill, and the girl ends up fucking him. Like, I just didn't like that. I just didn't like it at all. I don't know.
I could see how that.
That is a good point.
It is very convenient that it's the one guy that has superpowers as well that gets involved in this. Yeah,
what was the point of having Simpson in this whole thing?
So the point was, from my analysis, is that it's how Kilgrave's powers can affect you in a good way or a bad way. So Jessica Jones, it obviously empowers her to start like turning her life around.
Yeah.
With Will, he goes off the deep end.
And his character turn is weird. Like,
very weird.
He gets fucked up, and then he goes to the hospital, and he goes, get me this doctor.
Kozlov.
Yeah, Dr. Kozlov. And then he comes back and he's a total dick.
He's a complete dick. It's those Reds,
so
man.
It's so stupid.
You ever taken Reds? They'll fuck you up, though. Dude.
I did like the scene, though, when it's him and Jessica Jones and they're in the hermetically sealed room and they can't hear each other and they start talking to one another and giving their real thoughts. Like, Jessica's like, you got to screw loose. Like, you're fucked up. And he's just like, you're not a real hero. Just because you have powers, you're a real hero. Like, I liked their dichotomy in that they didn't really.
I never knew whether to trust him the whole time.
Even though he's not true. But if you look at the way he, like, everything was on purpose. So if you look at him, he's like evil Cap. He's what happens when you give these powers to a bad guy. Because even look at his hair. It's blonde.
But he has good intentions.
It's dyed blonde just like Cap.
Yeah, exactly.
And combed over.
He looks like fucking Chris Evans.
He's the super soldier just like Cap.
He's like the counter. He's the opposite.
He's like Red Skull. Like if you like give him, if this guy got the power.
But he always had good intentions. He wanted Kilgrave dead, but he was willing to kill fucking Jessica to get to him.
Yeah, but I don't know why he killed the cop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Clemens, who's also from the comic books.
I don't know why he had to kill Clemens.
He torched that whole place. Killed him and torched the whole place. Because Clemens knew he knew something. He had some shit on him.
No, he just knew that. I think it was the fact that he just wanted to get rid of the existence evidence of Kilgrave, everything. Like, get rid of this guy.
And the evidence.
But him killing the cop was a little weird for sure.
Yeah, he's the only character that really is fucked up in the whole series, I think.
I did love, though, him taking the fucking.
Him and the sister. The sister of the guys the sister that lives upstairs or whatever.
She was the worst.
I fucking hate her. She should have died.
She kind of redeemed herself towards the end.
She hated her.
Because
sucks. She still sucks. And she looks like she smells.
One quick point on Will Simpson. I just like that when he goes, give me the red, because that's straight out of the Daredevil.
Yeah.
But as to his Rug Boy's point.
That also created by Frank Miller.
Who doesn't acknowledge this stuff.
I was not going to watch this at all.
But the sister was probably the worst character I've ever seen. She literally was just, her acting was way too over the top. She took me out of it.
Well, let's talk about Malcolm for a second before we move on.
Because
the acting was great, but the character of Malcolm, very surprising. I did not see that coming. I love that turn. You know, we meet him as a junkie. Now, Malcolm in the comic books is more like a fanboy of Jessica Jones. And he just keeps bugging her until he gets a job. Where I love this Malcolm. I love that Kilgrave had been using him this whole time. I love it. The multiple times when Kilgrave has been used. He does that to Luke too. Like you don't realize the last two episodes he's still like under his control. But Malcolm's turn is great from going again a victim and an abuser to becoming starting a support group and actually calling out Jessica on her bullshit and even being more righteous. You know, the proper amount of righteousness to snap Jessica out of it. And at the end, like, kind of becomes her secretary.
Yeah.
Answers the phone.
Yeah, I mean, he is a great example of the power of having 13 episodes.
Yeah.
Because his character would never be anything. He'd be a character you write off in a movie. But he was a character you initially written off. And then you were like, oh my gosh, like, his evolution was great. So.
Yeah, you realize that he's a victim. Like, he didn't want to be a junkie. He was made a junkie by Purple Man so he could keep him in control.
Dude. Think about that. Like when they show, it was 6 months. She goes, this is Malcolm 6 months ago. He fucking turned him into a full on fucking crackhead in 6 months. That's frightening.
Yeah, because he was using the crack or the drugs to keep him coming back so he could re-Purple Man him.
Yeah, and I love the parts where Kilgrave didn't use his powers. Like the decisions he made, certain, like when he bought that house, he is about to use it. He goes, look, I got $1 million here. I'll give it to you if you move out tomorrow. And then the other time he was trying not to use his powers. Very interesting for a guy that could just get anybody to do anything he wants.
Well, going back to Malcolm too, though, it's you learn in this show that he wasn't always under the influence of Kilgrave. He admits that like, no, sometimes I was just doing it
for the crack.
But it's because he was pushed in that direction.
Yeah.
And he was like, I kind of like this. Like he was pushed a little off the deep end, and then what a lot of times, like a metaphor for life. Once you get a taste of something like that,
the temptation,
you sometimes get stuck in it.
I can kind of relate.
There was
to
also
that.
Another point I wanted to make before Imran jumps in and takes over.
Yeah.
what? Me? No.
Yeah.
The Jocks quarterbacking this.
There was this thing where people were like, when you're under Kilgrave's control, you don't have to be responsible for what you do.
Yes, yes. That's what I was going to bring up, that some of the lines from the support group were so interesting, and it made it so much more intricate, where the guy's like, look, I actually liked it. Like, I felt like, you know, it wasn't me, and it kind of freed me. Now, the Malcolm's bit where pretty much he's saying, this was inevitable. I was probably going to become a crackhead. This is the thing that pushed me there. Guys, I can totally relate to that. I may have gone through a similar thing where you go back and you blame certain people for like, oh, if I didn't meet them, I never would have fucking started drinking and drugs. And then you're like, you know what? That was going to fucking happen anyways.
It was always in me. I just needed a catalyst.
Yeah. And so I love it. So many layers of this that they just throw in. It's fucking deep. It's awesome.
It's brilliant in a lot of ways.
I mean, it's deeper than – like, it has so many more layers than Daredevil. Daredevil, it seems like – but why?
We'll compare it to Daredevil later.
Oh, we were going
to
do that later?
Yeah,
sorry.
We'll do that.
He's quarterbacking.
What else do you want to cover in terms of Jessica
Jones?
Yeah,
call the next play.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was going to say there's two more things I think we should cover. We kind of did our own favorite moments, but was there ever any other moments that you guys were like, this was awesome, this, or like a line or something like that? And then after that, we can do just nitpick it a little bit before we move on.
There's plenty. Let me think.
Did we do all the Easter eggs as well in Run?
Yeah, we can do Easter eggs.
There's some
here too.
We could do more.
Yeah, we could do some Easter
eggs.
There's
definitely more.
I would say, go ahead.
We talked about Patsy Walker being Hellcat. We talked about who everybody actually is in the comics.
Right.
We talked about the uniform.
You know, there's a lot of shows too that claim they're dark. And they're dark because they have the lighting's dark, or like they shoot it at night. But this show is actually dark in the fact that they use like horror tropes, like fucking Kilgrave's dad with his arms cut off and then waking up, and like some of the scenes with like the guy shoving an arm down a fucking garbage disposal. Like, this is actual dark.
Because he made them cut his arm off and kill his roommate and then put the arm. And the guy knows he's doing this and he can't stop himself, and it's so horrific.
What's the character's name that gets framed for shooting her parents?
Hope.
I mean, even just that scene where she's laying in her own piss, like, that's dark.
I'll tell you
what's
dark.
This is real fucking dark.
I'll tell you what's dark. Like, the whole Hope thing was amazing because this was the one reason, and even the characters are asking why Jessica wouldn't just, because you're like, just put a fucking bullet in Kilgrave's head. And everyone's asking her, why are you keeping him alive? And it's Hope. And the name is figurative and literal, metaphorical. She wants to clear Hope. Now, after she does that, when Hope is like, look, if I'm the reason you're not putting him out, I'm going to take myself out of the picture. And she fucking stabs herself. No control over fucking from Kilgrave. Hope takes herself, kills herself. That scene with the guys, and they were all in the noose. He tells them to step off. So that scene was amazing, actually. That was another favorite moment. Jessica's there. Purple Man goes, take a step. Hope has stabbed herself and is bleeding out, and he takes off. Like, what the fuck are you supposed to do?
Yeah,
and she chooses to let Hope bleed out to save the hanging people. And Hope's like, go kill him for me. You don't have to worry about it. I was like, fuck, dude, that was fucking dark and very disturbing.
Ruggs, you got any moments that stuck out for you?
None of them are going to be like, you know, the
Sin Bin's
or,
right.
Or, you know, that whole interplay where the girl stabbed herself in the throat. Or even when the girl takes Patsy takes the red pill and kicks the shit out of everybody. They're all great. But early on in the show, when Jessica Jones finally gets the drop on the Purple Man and actually goes to see him, and then she gets that realization that she's no longer under his control.
Ah,
I think that was cool.
The first time where she resists.
Yeah.
Where she's like, let me go, and she doesn't.
She doesn't, yeah. That was cool. One more moment was when the old neighbor comes by. And David Tennant basically calls her out on her bullshit.
Yeah.
And then even Jessica Jones, like, that kind of felt good.
It was the one time where
she's like, I knew that something bad was going to happen when you rode out. And he's like, did you really know? She's like, no. She's like, how does that make you feel? Like, what would you do? I would slap that person if someone said that to me. And
he's like, that's a pretty shitty thing to say,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, he actually – and, you know, he saves. She gets him to save people at one point.
She does, but he does it for, like
– for fun almost.
For fun. He doesn't do it because he wants to do it.
Yeah,
he's doing it because, like, she thinks it's fun. So he's like,
it's like a
kind
game.
Of fun.
Yeah, it's like a game to him.
Yeah, it's not for the right reasons.
What was I going to say?
Do you guys have any other moments? Because I was going to go into just nitpicking the show just a little bit.
How about the fact that really, despite the fact that – Purple Man was not controlling Jessica, in all of the interactions, he always had control. Whether he was using his words to make him seem like the victim.
Or he had a contingency plan. Or he had a contingency plan.
Every step, he was always in control without even using his powers. Like, Jessica couldn't really get the upper hand until the very, very end.
That's a good point.
When Hope takes herself out.
There's another. That's a good point. There's one more.
Like, didn't cause her to almost fucking kill him in a hermetically sealed. She was beating him down unnecessarily. And she even says, he was in control the whole time because he was being a little bitch.
That's a great point. There's one more that made me, what you just said made me think of is he is a metaphor for kind of like that creepy stalker guy.
Yes.
So like, and like the films, like the romance films where growing up as a kid, you see like the guy like go all out and like give the girl flowers and chocolate and like make himself like stuff that in real life.
But who can't relate to that? Who hasn't done that in their life?
But stuff that like in real life you would do and you realize this is creepy as fuck and the girl like does not like this shit. He was doing all those things.
Dude, it makes you think about
never learned about love. Dude, he's never learned about courting a girl the right way.
And it makes you think about the shit you pulled with girls like that and be like,
creepy
it
is from the other side.
I guess that was more creepy than I thought. Like, he confuses romance with creepy. The other thing that really creeped me out is I like how I mentioned to you before. Ruggs, did you ever watch that show, The Following, with Kevin Bacon?
No.
So it was basically about Kevin Bacon was going after this guy in jail who was a cult leader, but he had followers on the outside, and they were just delivery drivers, pizza guys, normal people who would pull shit, and you didn't know. And that show creeped the fuck out of me, because then I started looking at people, and I was like, any of these motherfuckers? Like, I really felt it tied into almost kind of the paranoia that's happening in the country right now. The kind of, like, you don't know who's doing what for what agenda. Also, like, Charles Manson. Charles Manson sent his followers to kill people. I don't know if Manson actually killed anyone. He just had a lot of people under his control. Like, so it reminded me of all this kind of cultish behavior. That's pretty, it was realistic in a way that a guy can do this.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think at this point we should just take a break.
All right.
And then we'll go.
I gotta pee.
Yeah, okay. And then we'll do a second half with nitpicks and comparing to other stuff.
Do you like superheroes? Do you like comics? Do you like film? Do you like comics and films about superheroes? Well, then you're in luck, because we here at A Place to Hang Your Cape have everything for you. We've got reviews. We've got interviews. We've got list articles. We've even got a few videos coming up. Anything you could possibly want that's relating to superheroes, we have A Place to Hang Your Cape, where superheroes go to hang their cape. The name is self-explanatory, really. I don't know why I have to explain it, but there you go. Find it at ap2hyc.com.
The H stands for H.
The H. Doc and Nerd. Bro, do you even podcast?
All right, quarterback. What's the play? Why are we running? 34 red, 56 9. Give me two reds. Give me two reds.
So we never got to nitpicking the show, but we praise the show a lot, but no show is perfect. So figured we spent an hour praising it. Let's just spend a couple minutes here. What, are there any nitpicks you guys had? Anything you didn't like?
Why are these shows 13 episodes? I feel like both Daredevil and Jessica Jones
went a couple episodes too long.
Maybe you could do it in 11.
I could agree with
that. Do you think they held back too much on the powers?
I don't think it was about the powers, though.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it wasn't about the...
This is the show that's going to pull in people who don't know anything about this character, who don't maybe watch the superhero movies. This, like we said earlier, this is a great entry into the MCU for a really casual person to hook them enough to maybe go watch other stuff. Whereas you went into Daredevil going, oh, it's fucking Daredevil. Like, we expect to see Daredevil.
But I do feel like that they should have... Because Daredevil is one thing, okay? Daredevil is like... For all intents and purposes, he's a ninja, all right?
You're right.
All right, he has the blind powers, but, I mean, if a guy could see, with you know, he pretty much did the same shit that Daredevil does, like a ninja. But when you're establishing not only a superhuman-powered person, that and you have the world of, like, the Avengers involved, and there's a mention of the attack on New York, I think there should be a little bit more done in the scope of maybe just the public consciousness of powered people that it should be more of a thing, that more people are talking about it. It's more in the public consciousness.
I kind of agree with that. Do you think there was any subtle setups for Civil War? Did they? I feel like they were trying to show the divide.
Episode 4 was your best one because it was that lady, like, blaming the superheroes.
That was the point of her. Because what was that storyline for?
She was blaming the superheroes for killing, like, someone in her family.
So she hires him.
She hunts down Jessica Jones to kill her.
It was like it was a fake hire just so she could take her out because she's like, you guys are freaks. I feel like you saw that when Jessica picked up the guy's car and she's like, look, you could tell people.
But
I'm not hiding.
To Rug Boy's point, though, and if this is a world where we've seen the Avengers, I do think it's a little unbelievable that no one would believe that someone could have mind control powers.
Well, not only Avengers, this is a world where it's been, what, since 2008, there's been an Iron Man. Like, they've seen these guys for years. Not only that, just 6 months ago, all that Daredevil, it's the same place, it's in Hell's Kitchen. Just 6 months ago, all that Daredevil shit happened. And I would think they would talk about that more than the movies. Like, refer to that.
Yeah.
Those incidents. Now, we get Claire Temple at the end. We'll go into a couple of Easter eggs. There's another reference to that first show.
I'm glad you brought up Claire Temple because I actually didn't like her role in it.
Really? I love Rosario Dawson.
I like Rosario Dawson, but
that's why this is the nitpick section.
That 13th episode, I felt like it spent too much time on a character that if you didn't watch Daredevil, who the fuck is this character?
Yeah, they think she was charming and
it's not that she's not charming. It was almost too wink, wink, nod, nod, Daredevil.
It was all that. Yeah. I'll agree because if you didn't watch Daredevil, you wouldn't know what the fuck she's
and
talking about.
And this is the 13th episode.
She's
so this
like,
point,
I know a guy.
This
what
point, I want it to be resolved. Like, I want the conflict. I want Tennant and I want Jessica Jones. I don't want to see any nods to Daredevil. Not for the 13th
episode. That's where I think the last couple of episodes kind of meandered a little bit. Which is why I think you should compact. You could have compacted the front half a little bit more and gotten to that stuff a little bit quicker and had a better overall climax, and then you could take your foot off the gas for like an episode, half an episode, but then it seemed to take like two episodes, and then but you're right, the end was cluttered with all the nuke shit, with all that shit.
There was a after Sinbin, you wanted to follow this journey of her,
but
getting
after Sinbin, we don't see Kilgrave for like a whole episode.
Exactly,
and they had to wrap up all this other shit.
Yeah, that was one of my main nitpicks. Is I think the show kind of peaked a little too early, and that's something that I think even Daredevil had a problem with. Is like peak.
Why they
early.
Pick 13 episodes?
You think it should be 10?
10 or 11? Like, 11, yeah. There's no format. It could be however.
It's not
you
even
want.
That you would cut out one episode. It's if you just shorten the
yeah.
some
no,
of the stuff.
No, you could compact yeah. all yeah. the shit into 10 into nice 10 episodes, maybe.
Rugboy, do you have any?
Well, no. My main one was that it's just
the universal
thing.
Universal. Okay.
Yeah. And then if I'm going to make another nitpick, it's like I didn't really like that the policeman character at all.
You didn't
all.
Like her. You also mentioned you didn't like the sister, and I agree with her. We agree with that. You didn't – the sister of whatever the fuck his name was.
I remember.
Killed.
This is what I was
that was weird. That sister was just
Ruben, too – Ruben's sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ruben Sandwich.
Robin, right?
Robin and Ruben?
I think it was
it Robin. And
yeah, Robin.
No, I remember I read a rumor. This is what I was like, oh, I was sad. That Matt Murdock possibly was supposed to make an appearance. Maybe something got cut out. Maybe if that was put in
but
context.
Where would that have fit?
I don't know. I think we discussed this, and the point can be made that if Murdock comes in at the end as like, oh, I'm here to help, like it kind of takes away the point of the whole series of the woman in charge
yes.
and the woman taking
yes.
control. Like it'll just make her powerless. So it wouldn't have fit, but then
be the man coming in to save
it would have made it easier to fit in Claire Temple.
You know who fit that role? Will Simpson's character. He was the man to save the day, except he didn't.
Except
he fucked up.
Yeah.
He made it even
But they
worse.
Needed to introduce Claire because she's going to be in Luke Cage also. She's going to be like the only one that's in like all the series,
true.
Possibly.
I would have liked to have seen Patsy Walker like holding like a newspaper with a picture of like the Daredevil. I didn't go, we should be doing this. I want to do this.
Well, there's something like that when we get to the Easter eggs I can...
No, that actually would have been a lot better for me than having Claire Temple in it.
There should have been some kind of like guy. Have you seen this ninja guy or this guy in the red suit? Like, hey, just give me one of those. Because this is literally the same neighborhood in the same universe that the fucking shit is happening just 6 months later.
Yeah.
Do you like the fan service stuff like that?
It doesn't look, it's a little bit.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a lot. Just throw it in.
Look how well it works in Arrow.
Yeah, that's true.
And yeah, like, and
acknowledging
Flash,
things
yeah.
and yeah. acknowledging things that happen in other universes, tying things
yes.
together, making crossover episodes.
I love
that. That like are involved. I mean, sometimes yes, they when they're doing like setting up a whole other show with it,
yeah,
it's annoying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like when they're just crossing over because they want to cross over, it's cool.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Buffy and Angel did it perfectly.
Oh yeah, they would do that all the time, and it was a shared universe. So.
I'm trying to think of other nitpicks, and I really don't have.
So we didn't like the sister character, although
she was awful.
I liked it. I liked her.
I didn't understand what was her deal.
Look, what I appreciated.
She fuck her brother. Like, what was her
no,
deal?
No, she was just they were just weird and overprotective, and she. This is what I like. I like that actor's performance because I think we weren't supposed to like her, and she fucking pulled that off perfectly. Although I just watched the last episode, and she has that funny line where Malcolm finally takes her to the river where he dumps Ruben, and she's like, what are we doing here? She goes, if you're trying to get with me, she goes, romantic background? Working? What else do you, what do you want to do? Like, she thinks he's trying to hit on her and bring her into the fucking
I did read
dump.
Online that she was, like, a kind of a metaphor for control and how, some like, she tries to rally, like, all the focus group against Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
And, like, she's, like, trying to control every aspect of her life and how, like, once you lose the person you were controlling the most, it kind of falls apart for you, and you're looking for other people to control, and you pass along this trauma. Same sort of deal. That makes me think of another point that I didn't like. It was way too goddamn easy for her to rally all those people against Jessica Jones.
Well, but that's the thing. It just threw in another fucking stupid thing that she has to deal with
right.
for that one moment while all this going on, and now the support group is coming after her to kill her.
There is no reason for the support group
let's go get her!
To blame Jessica Jones for all their trauma.
Although, Jessica Jones has a lot of blood on her hands. Like, a lot of
of the support group, though. What did Jessica Jones have anything to do with?
They were all affected because Kilgrave was trying to get to Jessica.
So then you kill Jessica?
Well, it doesn't make sense, but from their point of view, at one point I was like, man, fucking Jessica caused all these people's lives to be ruined. Unknowingly, but knowingly, like, she, instead of trying to clear hope, she could have killed this guy.
Is that a nitpick, or is that something you're just observing?
No, it's not a nitpick. Okay. It's just part of the story.
No, I mean, look, this series is very good, so there's not really a lot of things to nitpick on.
You're right.
So, I mean, yeah, it could have been a little shorter, a little tighter. A little bigger tits.
I like it
just
tighter.
Going along with the tighty.
I like it tighter.
Tight, short.
Tighter with bigger tits. I like it.
You want to get into your...
All right, let's do...
Let's not do all of them.
I'll do all of them. I'll pick out a couple of the fun ones. Like, right away in the beginning of the show, that scene where she knocks the guy through the glass window. Although, I loved how the window started out smashed, got fixed, and ends up smashed. Nice. I also loved how she just kept locking the door. Even though the window was smashed, she would, like, reach in, lock it, and unlock. I'm like, why are you locking the fucking door? There's no window.
It was a metaphor for just her, like, she's not
her
the perfect...
fragile thing.
She's just not a perfect superhero.
She's not very professional.
No,
like, she's flawed. So the scene where she throws the guy through the glass window and she's like, there's the matter of the bill. Like, that's straight from the first issue of Jessica Jones. So that's kind of fun.
I did a search, by the way.
All right, what do you got?
And,
you pull
and there
one
are,
off.
There are fappening picks.
What?
They're not as good as Melissa Benoist.
Wait, Kristen Ritter got fappened too?
Yeah, everybody got fappened.
So all these celebs were taking nudie pics, huh?
And they're all out there. You guys, Google. What did you Google?
I just Googled the. Just put nude after the name.
Kristen Ritter, I'm not going to do
it's
that.
Not like rocket science.
No, I guess
it's like nude after the name.
I guess
right. Anybody that you want to know, nude, and then that you.
I'm going to put in Rug Boy nude and see what happens. Okay, so we talked about Jaren Hogarth already.
Like, you haven't seen that like 1,000 times. there was a Stan Lee picture somewhere.
Oh, that was the two. So Stan Lee shows up. His same picture shows up in Daredevil and Jessica Jones.
Yeah, it was at the police station.
Where Kilgrave is controlling everyone. What the great scene that was.
One subtle tie I liked was, and I mentioned this to you, Imran, when we were talking about the show off air, was the cop, the African-American cop that comes in and releases Jessica Jones when she's getting questioned, is the same cop that the Daredevil guys were working with.
So in that scene, you see Stanley's picture over the shoulder on the wall. In the scene where all the cops are holding guns at each other, Stanley's picture is in a different place on the wall. Also on the wall, we see the Ben Urich story about Allied Chemicals pinned to the wall near Stanley's picture. So that's another tie-in to Daredevil.
So yeah, already. So like those tie-ins alone for me were good enough.
Now, remember when that dude wants Patsy's autograph, but she just turns around and decks him in the lobby? He has a comic book, which is like a modern version of the same issue of the actual Patsy Walker comic book from the 40s. Like, they did their homework here.
And he mentioned that she used to have red hair as well. Yeah.
Yes, and they did that too, where she had red hair in her little TV show. Metro General Hospital, of course, we mentioned. The costume is the same as the costume she was when she was Jewel.
Yep.
So that was a little tongue-in-cheek nod. Oh, she does, when she refers someone to the lawyer, Angela Del Toro.
Yeah, that's a superhero.
That's the White Tiger. Hmm. So maybe we'll see White Tiger. And we talked
about... If you watch Spectacular Spider-Man...
Oh, she's in...
No, not Spectacular. Ultimate. That new one.
Ultimate. But that is that the same character? That is White Tiger. I don't know if it's Angela White Del Toro.
I think it's a different White Tiger. But.
I like the line where she goes to meet Luke and the other bartender is like, oh, all the girls love him. You're going to love him. You're going to meet him. You're going to have his baby. Kind of joking. But in the comic books, that's what happens. They get married and they have a baby. They name it Danielle, a daughter, after Danny Rand, who is Irony Fist. The Carl Icahn line was, I didn't know who this was. Remember when... she's doing that deal on the street with the mobster, the protection, and she's like, oh, this guy thinks he's Carl Icahn. I'm like, who the fuck is Carl Icahn? Carl Icahn was this millionaire who at one point was trying to buy Marvel Comics. He was trying to take over the company. So I like this one. These are all, I'll put a link in the show notes here. If you go to jockandnerd.com/.
Yeah, let us be the last.
Let's
one.
Go Jessica Jones 1 for sure. Season 1. Jockandnerd.com/ Jessica Jones 1. There's a shot in when they're in one of the it's like a warehouse where she's chasing down one of the thugs, and you see the wall around the door is burnt. That wall is burnt because there's a scene in Daredevil where there's an explosion in that same warehouse
It's when they blow up all the Russian warehouses.
Oh, that's right. So this was one of the old Russian warehouses, and you see the burn marks along the thing. It's the same exact shot. I thought that was kind of cool. We talked to Sergeant Mahoney. Yeah, we talked to Stanley cameo.
Let's move on to – so you brought up Daredevil. So the easiest show to compare this to – there's two shows that I wanted to kind of look at and compare this to. There's Supergirl, because that's the only feminist show out right
Lame.
Now.
Lame.
Yeah. During the same time. Then there's also Daredevil, which is in this Marvel Netflix show.
Wowie zowie!
So let's go with Marvel and – let's go with the Supergirl comparison right away. Spend just a short amount of time on that.
How
is it better, worse than Supergirl?
It's exactly the opposite of what you should do with Supergirl, and to make a really meaningful, impactful, relevant, empowered woman superhero.
But that's not what they're trying to do exactly. But these are two different shows, Imran.
Well, it's true, but Marvel has unknowingly given us a better female superhero than the forced pandering Supergirl that they were trying to give you.
Well, in the terms of feminism, yes. But in the terms of a superhero that young people can watch with their families and stuff.
I guess you wouldn't want your daughter to grow up to be fucking Jessica Jones.
No, you can't. This is a show that's completely on a different demographic. A different audience entirely than Supergirl. But Supergirl is bad because it panders in such a way where it's like spoon-feeding you. And mm-hmm. Jessica Jones, there's so much to interpret. There's so much to kind of sink your teeth into. There's so much that you can kind of infer on your own experiences and kind of like use what you've learned in life to kind of bounce things off. So, and it's a lot of it's unsaid.
Yeah, yes, that's the one thing, though, like network TV shows, the lesson they can learn from this Netflix model is the it's more powerful leave out.
I think you're speaking too broad of terms. It's not the Netflix model. It's just this show. Just like Supergirl, and I agree that it's not good. Like, I don't like it. But it's not – just because Jessica Jones was successful using this format doesn't mean every show should be like this.
I'm just saying the lessons in the storytelling regarding – showing
the
powers
on a higher level,
right,
instead of talking about it.
I wouldn't say Netflix is the catalyst for us. No, it's the producers and Marvel.
It's just it's not network television. Right. Like, that's a huge thing.
But look at the source material they're pulling from here. They're pulling
from also true. It's
this
adult.
Great Brian Michael Bendis story that wasn't one of Marvel's first adult books.
Yeah.
And it could not be pandering. It could not be the lowest common denominator. It had to be intelligent. It had to have some kind of, you know, gravitas. It had to have some kind of, like, weight to it. So Supergirl can't compete in that arena.
Well.
But in the terms of feminism, mm-hmm. and empowerment and all that stuff, they're still approaching it better.
You saying Jessica content. Jones is? Or
yes.
Okay.
I mean, Supergirl is borderline offensive if you're a fucking feminist. Think about it.
Yeah, it's a little insulting because Supergirl runs around a lot of the times not knowing anything, how to do anything correctly, and bumbling around. And they're constantly I don't know what I'm saying. But they're constantly like shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, because they're writing it as they go.
I think
also.
The biggest thing is that Supergirl draws attention to, you know, like her issues and her being a woman. And as Rugboy said, a lot of the stuff in Jessica Jones has been left unsaid, and stuff that us three have been interpreting out. As we've done this show, is we've had to draw the conclusions. They're not telling us what the conclusions are to draw. Yeah.
So,
let's say if you were doing Supergirl, right? And maybe the strong female character isn't Cat Grant. Maybe it's her mom, or maybe it's her sister that's a really strong. But none of these characters are like they're hanging in a lot of it on Cat Grant.
Yeah.
And which is not the right, really not the right. She's like a vapid. Not a cool person to hang your feminism on. And she's kind of weak in a lot of ways, too. She's a very weak woman. She's like Cat Grant, if you analyze her. She's like obsessed with making her mark.
Yeah.
But she's not a good person.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she's femininity, like what is that? She's obsessed with looking good. That's not feminism.
Yeah.
With looking good and what how people judging people's hairdos. That's not feminism.
What people think of you.
She's sitting there like you know outwardly like bashing her glasses and her pants. That's not feminist.
So, I mean, if you want to talk role models, like I can see what they're going. They're trying to make Supergirl a fucking shitty role model, I guess. Because definitely Jessica Jones is not a role model. And
but Jessica Jones has no monetary aspirations. She has
she just
her
wants
aspirations.
To do good.
She wants to solve her problems. She wants to solve what is making her have misery. She wants to get to the bottom of it and take control over her life.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with what label she wears or how nice her hair is.
That's true. No, it is. It's being a role model isn't necessarily being a superhero. Being a role model can be just taking trauma in your life and turning it into a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, not letting it affect your life in ways that affect other people. And by the end of the episode, Jessica Jones is on that path.
Well, like, why do you think the character went into private investigation? Like, I think Rugboy hit it on the head. She wants to solve her problems kind of by solving other people's problems, helps her work through her own thing. But I think a lot of it, too, is that.
And then there's an underlying thing that she wants to help people. I also think it was a way of not thinking about her problems.
Yeah. So she can snoop on other people's lives and
be like, you know, their lives are fucked up, too.
Yeah.
Their lives.
But it does put it into perspective.
It validates her own fucking shit.
It puts everything into perspective.
Well, now we compared it to Supergirl. Let's compare it to something that was in the same universe and just came out, 6 months ago?
Yeah.
So, guys, just the opening question is, better or worse than Daredevil?
This is a fucking hard question because this is what I've been thinking about, and I don't – it's different. Like, they're both good for different reasons. I can't say one is better than the other.
What do you think, Rugboy?
I think that on the – if you're going to just talk about substance, just straight-up substance – Jessica Jones wins hands down. But if you talk about a superhero or some kind of powered person that's handled in a really great way that kind of strikes a great balance between the greedy, realistic world of and almost understated world of Jessica Jones, and then you have like the Avengers on the other opposite side of the pole – this Daredevil straddles a line that's very hard to straddle.
And they pull it off. I think Rugboy just fucking said it perfectly.
He nailed it.
Because that's exactly right. Thematically, And the content, Jessica Jones, is so much more dimensional. It's so much more layered. Yeah. It's almost more relatable. But,
yeah, it's very relatable.
Yeah. And Daredevil is more of like a – that's more of a gritty, noir, realistic superhero ninja show.
When I first ended Jessica Jones, I was like – I went with Daredevil being better.
Yeah.
But my favorite, just because that was more my type of show, the action and all that stuff. Yeah. But now that we've done discussions and I've thought about it more, I think Jessica Jones is better.
There's more going on.
I
think it's harder to do with what Daredevil does, though.
It is. No, you're right.
Yeah. I respect the challenging to do what Daredevil's doing.
But Daredevil doesn't prompt as much discussion like we're having now.
No, it's straightforward. It's a guy against another guy who's trying to ruin the city.
Go ahead, Ruggs.
But I have to also throw this in, Imran, because it has to be said. Daredevil is a character with rich, long history that has a lot of fans watching it, and you can't go a lot of places. You have to stick. And Jessica Jones, nobody fucking knows from a fucking hole in the wall.
They took a lot more freedom. They did. They changed a lot more things. They took more liberties with Kilgrave, with her character, and it worked.
Daredevil is a property that there's more to cater to, more people to please. Jessica Jones.
So having said that, I think the once they got this first season of Daredevil out, that the upcoming seasons will be even – now they can actually layer it and texture it more.
Jessica Jones is better by proxy of having the freedom.
Yeah, yeah.
And being able to explore whatever they want. They sat down and they had the basic core of the story from the Bendis novels and said, okay, we don't have to stick to this, but let's pull the greatest stuff from this and then let's really ramp it up. And Daredevil, they're like, okay, how do we even approach Daredevil?
How do we service this? And I mean, you know, there's 50 plus years of Daredevil stories. It's not, you know, Jessica Jones is from 2006.
They were able to do with Daredevil, they were able to take more liberties with Kingpin than they did with Daredevil himself. Kingpin was a different guy than what we've known to grow up with. He was like an autistic guy. He was almost like autistic. And
he was. He's a big boy, baby. Yeah. Boy child.
Yeah, it was weird.
Man child.
But, I mean, they're both great. As you mentioned, Imran, when you started, they're different. It's hard to compare, even though they're in the same universes. It's hard to compare them because they went for different things.
Let's just talk about the technical things then.
Yeah.
Direction, acting, and that type of stuff.
Daredevil, if you notice, and you mentioned this when we did our review, Daredevil had a lot of greens and golds, whereas this show was very grayed out, like gray.
Monotone, blue, but then you had a lot of cool colors and purple colors. There was subtle – I like some of the crazy shots where – the camera's just on the ground looking up, or it's like on the side of a stop sign, and there was a lot of Dutch tilt things going on.
There was very creative shots, just like Daredevil had that one cut hallway scene.
Yeah.
The scene that stuck out to me with Jessica Jones was when the cockroach crawls into the creepy drain, and then it comes out.
Yeah.
It's like a metaphor for, you know, your problems keep coming back.
Well, the direction, the camera movement direction was more subdued. It was more traditional. Like there wasn't like that
Jones
crazy.
Was?
Yeah, Jessica Jones. It was more straightforward, giving it that the detective feel, because it was really about her being a detective, the story, her figuring things out, whereas you needed really cool camera work to show the fighting and the ninja shit in Daredevil.
I think.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Yeah. I would also compare the villains, because people talked about Fisk a lot.
Yeah.
Like that he was awesome. I think Jessica Jones did a better job of rallying you against Kilgrave, whereas Daredevil had a hard time rallying you against Fisk. Like, you could still sympathize with Fisk. Like, they went for I think in the 12th episode, they had him kill Ben Urich as a last-ditch effort for you to hate Fisk. But Daredevil didn't do as good a job at making Fisk a guy you rooted against, necessarily.
But both of them had that same kind of villain structure, if you think about it. You're up front, you don't see the guy, you hear about him, you're like, oh, this guy's crazy. Then you meet him, then you get the backstory, and you kind of feel sad for both of them. And then they do something super evil, and you're like, oh, no, this guy's fucking crazy. One ends in the death, one ends in incarceration. I wish they did a kill Kilgrave.
Do you think that that's like a huge mistake that they made?
I should have mentioned this in the nitpick, was like the actual hair snapping his neck at the end, like that whole thing seemed awkward, like unclimactic. That
anti
climactic. That after all that, It's just a simple neck snap.
I did think that his character deserved worse. Like, dying was almost too
easy. That's the thing.
He's Fat Man on Batman, they suggested that you rip his tongue out.
That's a good one. Like, he should have suffered. I kind of wanted him to suffer more.
Death was almost too easy for him.
It was too easy for him.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know? He belongs in jail.
That is a cool thought.
There was something off about the very end. I loved how, like, he got everyone to, like, everyone kill each other. Like, that's from the comic book, too, at the end, where he just tells the person to, like, everyone kill the person to your left.
Who did you guys like better, Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones or Charlie Cox as Matt Murdock?
Ooh. Damn. fuck, dude. On the one hand, Cox nailed the fucking blind acting so good.
Not even the blind acting, but just
that's like, not hard. That's not easy to do.
Giving that proper credit. I'm just saying he pulled off the guy that is the ladies' man, but still a cool guy, like a good guy.
I think there was more heavy lifting on Kristen Ritter's part, though.
That's true. This is very true.
Because the character is just more layered,
very layered.
I think I bought into Ritter quicker than I didn't.
It's not that I didn't buy into. I liked Charlie Cox.
Yeah, no,
like, immediately
amazing.
I
know you love Cox.
Say that again.
I love Cox. Bro, do you even podcast? I mean, that's a hard comparison. I figured I'd throw that out there because
really hard.
They both did a really good job.
But Ritter
had more to handle.
Ritter, just off the bat, being a lead woman like this, holy shit, dude, it could easily have fallen in a – it just could have fucking been a disaster in the wrong hands.
Like, I feel like they could have probably put another good actor – in Daredevil's spot and been fine.
Mm-hmm. But because, not in Jessica Jones?
No, like Kristen Ritter and maybe a handful of maybe like two other actresses I could see as being, you know, like maybe, Lizzie Kaplan is my other big one that I thought would have been a great Jessica Jones. But, I mean, that's about it. Like, I really can't see some of those.
I'll agree with that. A lot of guys could have played Murdoch.
But to your point, and you kind of corrected me on it, let's not discredit the fact the method acting of Charlie Cox acting blind. Yeah. Like, that's a very hard thing to do. I mean, we've seen Ben Affleck do it and just stare off into space.
You've seen it done bad. Yeah.
And he's a good actor. So it's not an easy thing to just act like a blind guy.
Like, the research he did for that role, like that, like, if you go back and listen to our review, we mentioned that he like hung out with blind dude and asked questions and that's top notch. Now, I wonder how much Kristen Ritter had to like dig into her demons in her past to get some of these emotions and to get to the heart of some of this shit. Cause
judging from her pictures,
she's got huge skeletons in her closet.
Okay. So now that we've compared the two shows, it looks like next is season 2 of Daredevil. I think that's coming out in the spring, and then Luke Cage in the fall.
So every 6 months. So like next April, we'll get another Daredevil, and we'll get Luke Cage. Because they're shooting Luke Cage now. There's also set pictures of him on the street in a red shirt and shit.
Right.
And I think Claire Temple is there with him.
What are you guys excited for with them?
They're also shooting Daredevil still, I think.
It's almost finished.
It's almost done. They're shooting the Elektra scenes. I saw something came out.
So what are you guys excited for with these two upcoming Netflix?
I'm just like, I'm ready to watch Daredevil. I'm like, it's well, enough time has passed.
Yes.
You know, I want to see what they do. Like, I mean, they've just done this great thing with Jessica Jones. This is after Daredevil. So I want to know if that maybe changed their approach at all.
Right, right. And it's kind of like, I like how they're doing this, like what they did with the Iron Mans. There was two Iron Mans before you got to like the team up movie,
right?
Because you kind of need that much setup, and now especially with Daredevil, like we said, you have to get his whole first thing out of the way. The second one can enrich what's happened in Jessica Jones, and Netflix has said we're getting new shit every 6 months, new Marvel shit every 6 months. So we got. I'm excited for Daredevil season 2 because I want to see Punisher,
Elektra. There's gonna be some good shit.
I want to see what Frank Miller does not say about it.
I'm fully. I mean, especially after Jessica Jones, I'm fully on the Netflix Marvel bandwagon. Like,
again,
they're killing it.
This is the best. This is the best shit Marvel has made.
They're killing it.
It's Daredevil and Netflix, hands down.
Even like you guys mentioned, Mike Coulter not being as exciting as Luke Cage.
He's still gonna fucking pull it off.
But just the fact that it has the word Marvel and Netflix on it, I'm on board.
The fact that we're watching Power Man on screen and it's not fucking laughable is amazing. It's something like.
Do you think they're going to be able to make it compelling? Like, as compelling as, like, okay, you have Daredevil who has, like, all these great comics to pull from, Jessica Jones who has a great, you know, trade paperback to pull from, you know, short run series. But what does Luke Cage have that really, like, defines Luke Cage? Like, that you're going to pull from there? I mean, he's only cool in a way because he's part of the Avengers and he's a cool black superhero, you know?
We have,
but, like, what does he have? Like, what's his story that they're going to do?
Whatever they do, they got to put a lot of character right in the first episode, too.
Of Luke Cage?
Yeah, to get it, like, going.
I like that him and Danny Rand are, like, buddies. And they're like Batman and Robin almost, and they friggin' solve crimes together.
Is there a synopsis for this? Because that's a good question, because I know they're going to have...
There is a synopsis, if you go to Wikipedia.
Synopsis for the show?
Yeah, for Luke Cage. Yeah.
Oh, Luke Cage is going to be like a hero for hire. He's going to be like a dude, you hire him and he goes and takes care of business.
Well, he was created in 1972.
No, go to the synopsis.
John Romita Sr. When a sabotaged experiment gives him super strength and unbreakable skin, Luke Cage becomes a fugitive attempting to rebuild his life in Harlem and must soon confront his past and fight a battle for the heart of his city.
So he's a prequel-y?
I don't think they're doing prequels. Huh. They always release these stuff as if they came out like at this time. So I think
flashbacky.
So here's who's in it. We got Mike Coulter as Luke Cage. We have Mahershala Ali as Cornell Cottonmouth Stokes. He's probably going to be one of the main villains. Alfre Woodard. So here's your fucking.
So what's this Cottonmouth's power? He just needs a drink of water.
Look, Alfre Woodard is your fucking Carrie Ann Moss, your D'Onofrio for
answer,
this series.
To answer his question, yeah. Cottonmouth is like a super strength guy, but he bites people.
He's a drug he's a drug lord in New York City, and he bites people. So in the books, he framed Luke Cage for something, right. And that was why he became a fugitive. Now, if you notice, every time in Jessica Jones and the cops show up, he's like, I can't be here. I can't talk to the cops. I gotta go. So this thing has happened. So maybe it'll be similar. We get flashbacks of how he got his powers. I don't think all this shit happens in real time. I don't think it's going to take place before.
I agree.
It's going to take place 6 months after exactly the time Jessica Jones took place. So Alfre Woodard, heavy hitter. That she's probably going to be. She's going to be like a big deal there. Simone Missick as Misty Knight. So that's kind of, it's very like the 70s fucking style heroes and some other characters. Rosario Dawson, of course. But so again, sounds like a personal battle, fighting for his neighborhood more than the city.
I mean, no, well, I mean, yeah,
trying to clear his name.
It's personal. It'll be personal, but I don't know if it'll be as personal as Jessica Jones. Jessica Jones is not a battle for anything other than her trauma, getting over her trauma.
It's a great study in victim and PTSD. You know, suffering abuse,
right?
Abuse and trauma, dude. It's just crazy. Everyone is abusing and men abused.
What do you think the Danny Rand Iron Fist is going to be like? Do you think it's going to, how, what kind of feel do you think that's going to have?
I worry about it just because we've seen the ninja show. It was called Daredevil, you know? So what is going to be different about Danny Rand?
Mysticism.
They Eastern touched upon
mysticism.
This.
You think it's going to be like Into the Badlands with the Kung Fu and shit?
I still only watched the first episode, but
I hope there is Asian characters like Shanghai in there, because we don't, as someone that is part Asian, you never see any of your race on TV.
Yeah.
So that'd be kind of cool.
They need to drop some shit in Luke Cage to start establishing this too.
Iron Fist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although they didn't really do anything in Daredevil with to tie it to the next one.
They didn't do it too much to tie into Jessica Jones, but they did drop Serpent Society hints, or not Serpent Society, Iron Fist hints. With
yeah,
Kulu.
What about that? You remember Daredevil? It was it Black Sky? Dark Sky?
Dark Sky, yeah.
There's that organization. There's this IGH shit. Like, where is all this going to pan out? Are they connected? Can they be connected?
No, I don't know.
I don't know. That's a good question.
And will all that lead into something with irony? The fiery of the Iron Fist. It's called the Iron Fist. It's a move.
Who's it going to be fisting?
I don't know. I hope it's somebody slack hole. Rug boys, Iron Fist up my slack hole.
let's wrap up real quick. But before we wrap up, I read a quote by the Russo brothers, because everyone's talking about Netflix shows and will these ever cross over into the movies? And the Russo brothers gave a something that was along the lines of, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, they're like, that's a challenge. It's very hard.
Yeah, it's very hard. So do you guys think that we'll ever see these characters cross over to film? And following up, do you want them to ever cross over?
Well, I want them to. I want the Netflix guys to. I can understand what production schedules and the way these things are shot, and that it's pretty – it's got to be really hard.
I feel like that they have to, like, power up the people a little bit more in the shows to, like, even, like, be in the same room with some of these guys. Like they have to establish in the second seasons or even the first season of Luke Cage or whatever that – he's a fucking bad motherfucker, and like they could actually stand and help out Cap and Iron Man.
But I think they should do is like when you get to Infinity Wars, you can use all these groups at different levels. You got the big guys handling like the threat that's up in the air or up in space at the top level, and the fallout that's hitting the neighborhoods and streets, you cut to these guys on the streets kind of as their backup, cleaning up on the bottom, and then maybe you have like – the Guardians of the Galaxy fucking taking care of the space shit before it gets to the planet.
Here's another question. How much do you think they're going to spend on Defenders?
What do you mean, money-wise or time-wise?
Yeah, because like they're going to make a movie.
I thought it was going to be a series.
Is it going to be a series or like a movie?
I heard a series.
I thought it was going to be a series.
I
like
was
all
the impression it's a series on Netflix.
Oh, I thought it was going to be a movie. I thought it was going to be like a Netflix original movie with them in it.
That's what it could be, but the impression I got was it's a series.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
And I was wondering about if it was going to be like a 13-episode series. I was thinking they might do just a 6-episode for Defenders. This is just me.
I don't really know much
thinking.
About Defenders either.
I'm looking it up right now.
In terms of what they're...
Well, as you're looking it up, I've come to the realization that I don't care if they show up on the movies.
Oh, yeah?
You know why? Yeah, because I'm enjoying it for what it is. And to shoehorn them into movies that maybe already have plans and outlines for how they're going to use their characters and to shoehorn in Charlie Cox or Jessica Jones or Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones, it won't mean anything to me. It'd be cool. It'd be a cool moment, but I like these characters on the platform
on their own.
Yeah, I'm starting to like. Unless I'm starting to be able to separate the Netflix stuff from the Marvel. It doesn't need to be all this that cohesive.
It says it's going to be an 8-episode.
Oh, okay. I like that
series.
Oh, that's good.
I figured it'd be shorter.
Is there a synopsis there, Ruggs?
No.
Come on. Where's the sign up?
I figured it'd be shorter just because 13 episodes. I think like the luster would wear off.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to see them for a little bit.
Dude, but how fucking cool is it going to be if they get all these dudes on one screen?
Maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe instead of going full season, they're using that money into each episode.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know, they're taking the budget.
Yeah, so you shorten
it. That's smart if they do it that way.
Yeah.
Because they need production value. Yeah. They need to have, like, if you're going to ever cross these guys over into Marvel, like, cinematic shit, you're going to have to, like, amp up the production value.
And you could do it in 8 episodes. You could do it in 8 episodes, in 10. Like, it doesn't have to be 13.
Those 6 episodes, but, you know.
Yeah.
There's been quotes, too, though. It's weird from Marvel. There's been quotes that they have options for movies for these characters too, like Charlie Cox has said that. There's been other guys that have said if these do well, we could see these going into movies. So it could happen. I'm not as passionate about seeing these characters team up with like Iron Man or anything like that. I like where they're at.
Those guys are almost too bright too. Like,
it's a little too bright.
Too
it's
bright
it's
for
a little,
this
you know,
this
like
world.
When you see Cap punch people and you don't see any blood, but then when you see arms cut off and Jessica Jones, it's just a different thing.
Yeah,
it's not the crossover. It's tricky doing a crossover between two characters like that.
And after Kilgrave, how do you give them a villain that comes anywhere close, you know, to that kind of?
I'm glad you mentioned Kilgrave. Do you guys have any other thoughts on the cinematic crossovers or anything like that?
That's no, I mean, like I'd be happy if they just kept it on Netflix.
Yeah, me
but,
too.
I would like to see – I wouldn't have to always watch like a fucking series though. I would like to see a movie or even like a double movie.
I would be okay with some original feature length things with these characters. Like you know what would be great? They could use that like the annuals. Like in comic books where you have your series and then you have an annual that doesn't necessarily – fit into the storyline. It's just like a one-off story in the universe. It would be awesome if they made like a full-length movie as like just one-offs and kind of tied things together. That's cool.
A series is like the money that has to go into a series is not a lot to begin with, and they got to fucking make shit happen over like 13 episodes, you know. And if they could just max out the budget and do like a nice two and a half hour movie, we would fucking be great. And just have like everything rendered and realized in the way that it should be and not understood.
You know, and then I think it would feel more like the MCU at large in that format.
Yeah, it'd be easier to carry things over. Well, that's I think. I don't know. We're not going to do it.
Would it be rated R?
It'd be a not rated.
There's no ratings on Netflix.
No, I'm saying if they make a movie.
No, the movies aren't rated on Netflix.
I'm sure they go for that hard PG-13.
Are you saying wide release?
We're saying Netflix movie. Oh, okay. 2-hour Netflix movie.
Oh, okay. Then it's different.
Yeah.
Then they could keep it the same, though.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
And man, like, there's a lot of swearing in the comic book in Jessica Jones, too. So they left a lot of that out.
They swore a little bit, but they can't say the F word.
It's still pretty much a hard PG-13, really.
A box office movie is about getting people into seats, right? And there's like all of the stipulations and all this fucking shit, like kids, you know, an 8-year-old kid can't go and buy a ticket for an R-rated movie. So, but Netflix, though,
anybody
they
who wants
just throw that on no one's there. No one's really.
They have parental fucking locks and shit.
Yeah,
though.
But it's like, it's BS.
No, but I mean, like it's at that point, it's not the responsibility of the theater.
No, it's on the parent. Yeah. It's on the parent, really.
So to wrap up, what are your guys' thoughts on, it looks like, will there be a season 2? Probably, right? Of Jessica Jones. And what are your thoughts on the direction of a season 2 of Jessica Jones?
I don't know where it's going to go.
Well, I don't know. Where you go after this? Like
the IGH stuff, right?
There's still mysteries around the accident and how she actually, you know, why did they pay for her? What did they think they caused it? What does that mean? But like they've kind of like Jessica Jones had really one story in the comic books. They just did it.
Right.
After that, she shacks up, she gets pregnant, she raises a fucking baby. Like that's not a season.
But what about Defenders? Is that coming first or second?
I think it should come before a second season of Jessica Jones. What I'd like them to do is do Daredevil season 2, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Defenders. Then I don't know what. Then maybe it's season 2 of Jessica Jones. Season 2. Ah, fuck. I don't know.
Because this episode ended with the IGH stuff, which is stuff that needs to be explored. But it also ends with Malcolm answering the phone.
Alias investigations. And being,
like,
a thing.
So it being a thing that she's sort of becoming, helping people more actively,
and people,
using her powers.
People know about her.
Right.
Her phone is off the hook. They're like, we saw you help that person. I have a problem.
Right.
And I love how she's just like, delete. And then he's like,
so there is
them.
More room for character progression from her being this kind of delinquent, drunk, traumatized person to being more active in her.
But
in
you
her
could
hero
do another role. Great detective noir series.
I wonder, like Rugby, though, where, like, what's the conflict going to be?
Yeah, that's what is the next big thing.
Because with Daredevil, we already know the conflict's going to be Punisher. And there's a lore of characters.
Dude, there's
that
years of conflict for Daredevil.
But what about Jessica Jones?
There's no more story left.
Look, you have to develop Patsy Walker.
Yeah.
Maybe she gets bites off a little bit more than she can chew.
Maybe they're a team up. There's a team up.
And maybe Jessica's got a...
Oh, she has to save
her. Or maybe Patsy gets involved with some people and it drags her into the superhero thing. Like, who knows?
You have Nuke. Nuke could go really bad and need to be stopped.
And he went bad.
I mean, but worse. What happened to him at the end? Where was he? He just disappeared.
The Kozlov's team took him.
I want to just throw something out there.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's all these unresolved shit from season 1. Okay, you got IGH, you got Nuke, you got Patsy Walker, who is now, who is got her first taste of like kicking some ass and helping out Jessica Jones. So I think those things. So Nuke's gonna be like one of the big bads. Okay, she's gonna obviously do the bad turn. Maybe Patsy Walker gets her powers somehow through IGH. Maybe there's some kind of romance or something that where she gets entangled with that stuff and Jessica Jones got to bail her out. And then they're going to have like these episodic things that maybe she has some side missions that she takes on through her investigations.
Yeah, you still have the attorney. You could still have people, you know, that were affected by Kilgrave come back and bring up some beef. Yeah, take it out on her. She's famous. So, yeah, that's pretty good. Like that would – there's still a lot of story there. The thing is now – again, they have this freedom to literally take it wherever they want. They're not beholden to any 50 years of story. They can use this, work it in where...
They have that freedom, which is a good thing, but they also have the burden now of living up to the first season.
Yeah, that's always
Do you think that she's going to get Prego?
They might go that route. That's the only other story left, is she hooks up with Luke Cage. Maybe it...
It's the only story left that you know about.
That I know about. Yeah, that's existing. The
there's more. There's stuff to be explored.
But that's not. You don't want to see a superhero get pregnant. It's not very exciting.
But maybe that makes her like want to be a superhero more.
I think it would take her out.
Maybe be a better role model for a child.
Maybe, yeah.
Instead of being this drunk.
Get out of the darkness. I love that. Man, she. If you were to drink every time she drank, if you played that drinking game, you would be dead. By the end of the show, because she's fucking...
She puts it in water bottles.
I love how she's drinking all the time, just to forget. I bet it didn't even affect her that much. I bet her superhero metabolism is just like...
She heals faster.
But I just can't... She can drink a bottle, it does nothing. Unlike Rugby.
She doesn't heal that fast. She had like a cut for like 3 days or something.
She said she heals a little bit faster.
You know what? We didn't mention this, but I love how she describes her powers here and there, where... He's like, can you fly? And she's like, it's more like a controlled falling. Yeah. Like she could barely control the flying and her invulnerable. She's not invulnerable. And then those weird, like, what was that weird thing? Was there a scene where she jumped off a building onto a white horse?
Yeah, that was a dream sequence.
It was a dream.
That's gonna cut all that shit out. Like, is that necessary?
No. Remember when the people wanted to kill her because she was a superpowered person, mm-hmm. and then she tries to tell them that she's bulletproof and she's gonna shove a bullet up their ass,
yeah. and she gets shot.
Yeah,
that's funny. Season two, yeah. I mean, I'd be interested. I would definitely watch a season two.
Question is, what order are these gonna go in? Because that is really gonna make a difference.
Yeah, I think. I mean. Do you guys have any other thoughts? Because I think we're good on I think we've exhausted everything.
Everything I can think of now, and I'm sure we'll continue discussing this on future shows as it comes up.
Rugboy, do you have anything?
No, I just think we should just summarize what our final thoughts are.
Would you recommend the show?
I mean, absolutely. My final thoughts: I think it's a great show for as far as metaphors, as far as entertainment value. I think that it's a show that makes you think. And it doesn't spoon feed, and that's why I respect the show a lot. And I think it's a lot of great performances by characters and actors and actresses. So it's overall, I mean, great.
I mean, they've managed to do something here that is so brilliant, is to make a superhero show without really showing any powers. Now, I would love to talk to someone who has been through kind of the same trauma. Maybe... Someone who went and have them watch this show, because I feel like this show is probably a lot more therapeutic to some people who have experienced this than we think. Like that, I think they really nailed this feeling of being the victim of dealing with abuse, and it's so mature and adult to do, and as the basis of like a superhero, quote unquote superhero show, it's unbelievable.
I agree. I think that the acting is great. I think that the decisions that they made were smart. I think that Marvel is really heading into like Vertigo territory and adult and sexy territory. And I
very
like
sexy.
It.
So sexy.
Skanky, dirty, drunk, sexy. You know.
What was great about this is it was a show about issues and trauma and abuse and how you come out of that. That just happened to involve superheroes, and I think that's the best thing.
The main character is so flawed.
It's not
so relatable.
Everyone talks about the superhero genre, and it's a thing, but this is a case where it wasn't really a thing. It's not a superhero genre show. It's a reclamation story.
And this is what they're trying to do in the movies, and I think this is where they have to take their movies, because I think people are starting to grow a little thin of the same fucking shit over and over again in the superhero genre. Now what they're doing here is smart. This is where it needs to evolve to, is that the superhero has to become the background of a story
you
about
being a
superhero something.
Is ancillary to what the real thing is.
Yeah.
I agree. So that's all I got. Anything else?
No, good show. Good way quarterbacking. I think we got to the red zone and somebody made a crazy catch.
Were you going to hit a button?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, shit.
Oh.
Who cares? The jock said that.
Backed off the button.
Yeah, he did. I saw it too.
The problem is I have so many buttons that I don't. Sometimes I
fucking. Like, I don't know what it's going
to
press.
I have a brain fart and I don't know what to.
Let's quickly let's wrap up the networks we're on and all that. You have a 3-step method.
All right. Call to action. Final plugs, people.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
This has been a great Jessica Jones review. I was really excited to do this, and
I could tell.
Thanks for quarterbacking this. Anthony, I had a great time. We got to thank our networks that we're on real quick. These guys support us. We're on their websites. Thanks to the Weeby Geeks Network, a place to hang your cape, podcast.ph, and the Tangent Bound Network. You will find links to all these networks and stuff we talked about, some graphics, some images, some links to Easter eggs in the show notes at jockandnerd.com/JessicaJones1. Or /66. This will be episode 66. So check out those sites. There's a lot of great geek stuff. Rugs, where can people say hi to you?
You can find me on Twitter at reallyrugboy with the A in front of it. The little A with the circle.
Oh, the at or about sign.
Yes. At reallyrugboy.
Follow Rugs. And three things you got to do, people. Real simple. Step number one, you want to contact us. You want to chime in. You got something to say. Just go to jockandnerd.com/contact or check your show notes. There's links for several different ways you can get in touch. You can send us an email, send us a voice comment. It's lots of fun. Step number two, you're going to want to subscribe to the show. If you're listening to this on the website or you just press the play button somewhere and you want all the awesome geekiness that the Jock and Nerd podcast has to offer, pull out your phone, go to your favorite podcatcher, type in the Jock and Nerd podcast, or go to jockandnerd.com/review. It'll take you right to our iTunes page. Subscribe, leave a rating, a reviewing, and number three, just tell a friend. Tell someone who has seen, just binge-watched Jessica Jones, and they want to geek out about it. Give them one of these.
Jock and Nerd.
That's the three steps.
That works.
That's all I got.
There you go. So
you said it all, Imran.
You said it all.
I've said too much. And I'm going to spike the ball in the end zone and do a crazy wiggle dance with my knees. Thanks for listening. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the Jock.
He's a nerd.
And we'll catch you next time.
Yahoo!